Court is now in session. The Honorable Chief Justice Annette Kingsland Ziegler presiding, your silence is commanded.
All right, please be seated. Good morning. We are here this morning for rules hearings. First, starting with 2401 in the matter of amendment of Supreme Court Rule 3208 sub 2, reserve judge per diem for judicial. I have listed a presenter, the Honorable Sarah O'Brien, reserve judge. And I don't know if anyone else would like to speak, but think about that as she's making her remarks, because I'll open it up for additional comments if she somehow doesn't cover the base for everyone. Thank you, Chief. All right.
Good morning, Chief Justice and Justices. I am Reserve Judge Sarah O'Brien, and I am here with other members of the Executive Committee of the Reserve Judge Association, Judges Momstad, Frankel, Simple, and Carlson. Our association voted overwhelmingly to petition the court to reinstate the per diem payments for the days reserve judges are required to attend judicial education. Under previous Supreme Court rule, this per diem was paid for 25 years, from 1992 to 2017. The per diem was taken away in 2017 with no explanation. We believe it is a matter of basic fairness to reinstate the per diem. There are 91 reserve judges currently appointed in Wisconsin. They play a vital role in the justice system, filling in for judges who are sick or injured, on parental leave, attending judicial education, or fulfilling the duties of chief judge in their district. Reserve judges fill the gap in branches where a judge has retired and a replacement has not yet been elected or appointed. And when the new judge takes the bench, reserve judges sit with them, mentoring them as they preside over their first hearings and trials. Without reserve judges, the wheels of justice would turn far more slowly. In exchange for their service, reserve judges receive a per diem equal to 90% of the daily salary of a sitting judge. Like sitting judges, reserve judges are required to attend judicial education each year. Supreme Court Rule 3208 sub 1 provides that a reserve judge must earn 4 judicial education credits in the calendar year immediately preceding their appointment or reappointment. Currently, reserve judges have only their expenses paid for attending judicial education. They do not receive compensation for their time. This is in stark contrast to employees in most occupations, where federal and state laws strictly require that employees be paid for their time attending training and education required by their employers. It is in stark contrast also to sitting judges who are paid to attend judicial education. They are not required to attend during their free time. There is simply no logical reason to treat reserve judges differently. Although under the previous rule, reserve judges were compensated for attendance at an unlimited number of days, our request is more modest. We are requesting compensation for just the bare minimum number of days required to receive 4 credits, generally 2 days per calendar year. We respectfully ask that you grant this petition. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Before we proceed to questions, I should have, from the outset, acknowledged that Justice Dallet is appearing by telephone today, just so that you don't think somehow she's not part of this process. And Justice Dallet, okay, I just wanted you to acknowledge that you were actually there.
I am listening.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good, good. So, all right. Any questions?
I do have a question. I wasn't here in 2017, but I remember being familiar with some of the discussions that occurred at the time. And as best I can recall, some of the arguments that were made there were judges who were receiving again more credits. I understand your proposal here scales that back, But there were also many judges who were not serving at all as reserve judges, but were just going to conferences. And so part of the question was, and my, if my recollection is not completely correct, I mean, again, I was not in as part of those discussions, but this is sort of me trying to figure out what was happening because I was in the judiciary at the time. But that, you know, in essence, it was a significant expenditure of, you know, state funds where there was no sort of return on investment, right? We were paying for, you know, reserve judges to be eligible to be serving as reserve judges, but were never serving. And so whether that was a prudent use of taxpayer money. Again, I recollect that being at least one of the conversations that happened at the time. I know there's many reserve judges who serve regularly and faithfully and do a great job, and of course we thank you for your service. But I just want to ask that question, whether you have any numbers on that of the 91 reserve judges, how many are actually serving, and just helping us think about what does it look like for us to be prudent stewards of the taxpayer, you know, funds.
Thank you, Justice. I think that's certainly a reasonable concern. It's one that could fairly easily be addressed in the appointment process. If you want to be a reserve judge, you have to reapply each year, and there's a questionnaire that you fill out with where do you want to serve, what kind of cases will you handle. It could certainly be added to that questionnaire whether you served as reserve judge last year, and if not, was that due to any illness or, you know, were you available to be a reserve judge? So I think my first reaction to that is it would probably be easier to handle that in the appointment process than in regard to the judicial ed. But I don't have the numbers. The court has the numbers.
Yeah.
And Melissa Lamb left in the middle of this. She would have been able to tell me all this in a phone call. I do know that I think it's highly unlikely that all 91 reserve judges would attend two full days of judicial education. As a matter of practice, a lot of us are traveling a lot and doing other things. But even if all 91 reserve judges attended 2 days of judicial education, we estimate the annual cost to be less than $120,000. And like I said, I think that's much higher than in reality would be billed to the court.
Do you have any again, I understand you don't have all the numbers, and that I'm sure we do, and I don't think the Director of State Courts offices has weighed in or verified those numbers. If I have, I can be corrected on that, but in terms of budget. But do you have any sense for how many of those 91 actually serve?
I really don't.
Okay. Do you think, well, let me just ask a question, because what I sense here is an argument based off of, you know, just an appeal to fairness. Hey, we're working, we're doing the state's business, we're required to be here to remain eligible, and so we should be compensated for it. And I totally understand the appeal of that. The flip side of that, I guess, is that, you know, we don't want to probably be just paying for retired judges to go on a conference circuit and stay at a hotel and cover their expenses and pay them without it actually being of service to the people of Wisconsin. Would you agree with that?
Do agree with that.
Okay. So my concern about just as sort of a blanket rule as drafted here is that it still leaves pretty broad space for that. And at least going to judicial conferences, eyeballing it, my sense is that a good chunk of the retired judges are not serving regularly in courtrooms. And so there are still substantial expenditures where the state taxpayer is not necessarily receiving judicial services for judicial expenses. And so I understand the fairness argument, particularly for those who are actually doing the work in the courtrooms. But do you have any suggestions for us to potentially consider on how to guard the state's costs and make sure that if we're spending money, we're actually receiving, the taxpayers are receiving judicial services for judicial expenditures?
Let me just point out that the court is paying the expenses now. And
right.
So, in fact, I could go to every judicial education course in the year, and I would get my mileage and my hotel and food paid. So this does add an additional layer to that. as I indicated in respect to your previous question, I think there are ways to address that by making you certify that you've worked as a reserve judge in the last year or something like that in order to receive the payment. And I don't think we'd be opposed to that.
Your Honor, Bull, it seems to me that Justice Hagedorn has articulated a very reasonable concern, but my notes reflect that in about your second sentence of presentation today, you said it was taken away in 2017 with no explanation. So was what is being articulated now at all conveyed to you as rationale?
It wasn't conveyed to me or to the other justices on the court. I mean, there is a written decision and a written dissent from 2017, and the dissent objects to the fact that the rule was changed with no consultation with reserve judges, sitting judges, the trial court association. There just was no public process, no analysis of whether this was a good or a bad idea. Took place behind closed doors.
Are you done?
Yes. Judge O'Brien, thanks for being here. First of all, I want to thank you and the other judges for your work as a reserve judge. And full disclosure, you did sit with me when I was a brand new circuit court judge. I'm able to blame all my mistakes after that point on your training. I'm kidding. You were great. And of course, I practiced in front of you for years and years, and I was in the DA's office. So I will never get used to me being up here and you being down there.
Be careful when she starts with compliments.
Right.
Often there's a comma, but
she knows. She knows. Had you had the opportunity to participate back in 2017, I assume that you would have made the case that you're making today, correct? That the reserve judges, that the benefit to the judiciary, to litigants, to the court system, quite frankly, to the entire state of Wisconsin, is significant, and that in order for you to be able to do your jobs correctly and to be able to stay current, you need to go to these conferences, and you should be compensated for the time that you spend there, correct?
I agree.
Okay.
I think in some respects the case is stronger today because during the COVID pandemic, reserve judges served all kinds of ways that they haven't served normally. So some of us actually had CCAP computers at home and could conduct full-fledged court appearances from our home. And I think in Milwaukee there's still a permanent reserve judge trying to help them catch up with the backlog. So,
and Judge O'Brien, I was going to ask you about that. I know from my years in Milwaukee on circuit court, reserve judges were used on a very regular basis. And I'm not sure if there weren't enough Milwaukee County retired judges. But we've had judges from Ozaukee County, a retired judge, judges from Racine County coming in to fill the gap. So my perception is it's a very, very real need. Do you agree with that?
I do agree with that. I have been fortunate to serve as reserve judge in maybe a dozen counties all across southern Wisconsin, from an ongoing three-month appointment when someone was on paternity leave to presiding over a drug court when Judge Dyke was ill. So it's all different kinds of assignments.
Well, and I also commend you for your request, which I agree with your term, is because, quite frankly, I believe the more education people have, the better. And you're only asking for 2 days of per diem reimbursement, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Any other questions?
No, thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Judge.
Any other presenters on this topic? Judge Stark? Oh, I'm sorry. You two decide who goes first.
Ooh, this could be fun.
Judge Stark. Okay, Judge Stark, I saw you first.
I just wanted to make a comment partly in response to Justice Hagedorn's questions from my recollection of what occurred in 2017. And the budget is very important. It was a big consideration, and I'm sure making this decision. But I also want to just ask the justices to consider the broader implications of this. And this is something that I addressed in my comments at the Judicial College in my last opportunity to address the people who attended. And that is that we are underutilizing a very wonderful resource with vast experience. And we are doing that in the thought that perhaps we're saving some money, which I might suggest is a little short-sighted, and that the Director of State Courts, Chief Judges, and the District Court Administrators limit the number of judges that are permitted to have reserve judges fill in for them for purposes of judicial education, which is a shame because then they don't go to judicial ed. They don't take their vacations, and we emphasize wellness all the time, but judges don't take their vacations because their calendars pile up. So my thought would be to also ask you to consider, again, how reserve judges are used, and perhaps those 91 would be necessary and used on a regular basis if we made this opportunity available. And it's a terrific idea that 91 of them are still willing to do this. They're a terrific resource. Thank you.
Thanks, Judge.
Thank you.
Judge Semple.
May it please the Court, I probably will not benefit from this action if you guys decide to pass it. And in answer to Judge Hagedorn's question, some of you know my health's bad. And because of that, I intend not to apply for reinstatement in 2025. And I would think that knowing a lot of my colleagues, that they would do the same thing I do. And that is when you decide you can't serve anymore, not apply. And I think you've got to trust the circuit judge, the reserve judge, for doing that. And I think that Judge O'Brien's suggestion on the certification that you ask whether or not a judge has served as a reserve judge, and then decide if they say no, ask them why. And I think if you make that requirement, more judges will do what I do, what I'm going to do. And I would ask that you guys pass our petition. Thank you very much.
Before you leave, I want to make sure from a public forum that we express our deep appreciation for your many years of service. So thank you.
Well, I've been fighting. I've been fighting cancer since 2000. It's now spread in my lymph nodes. I'm too ornery to die. It's as simple as that. I intend to be around for a while. And, you know, people say to me, well, you look great. I feel great. But you never know. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard?
Chief, I feel like I should go down to the podium for the remarks I'm going to make at this moment, but I would like to publicly acknowledge Judge Semple and Judge Malmstead, who took the laboring oar in training me when I joined the children's court bench, having never stepped foot into children's court as a practicing attorney for 16 years. So I certainly appreciate the service that the reserve judges provide, not only to the people of Wisconsin, but to their fellow judges on the bench. Having said that, I was here in 2017 under the leadership of Chief Justice Pat Rogensack, and I feel compelled to expand upon the remarks that Justice Hagedorn mentioned during his questions. There was nothing nefarious about the court's action in limiting the compensation or per diem for the reserve judges back then. In fact, it was under Chief Justice Rogensack's leadership that I think the use of reserve judges actually expanded. I joined the court shortly after Chief Justice Rogensack took over as Chief Justice. Before that, I did, as I mentioned, spend 2.5 years on the Children's Court bench in Milwaukee County, during which time I never took a vacation, and if I was sick, one of my colleagues handled not only their busy calendar, but my busy calendar, and I did the same for them. There were no reserve judges who were provided to us, which I'm not complaining or lamenting. I loved my work at Children's Court. I miss it to this day, but it's not a healthy situation. But that was not a situation that existed at all under Chief Justice Rogensack's leadership of this court. Thank you.
Okay. All right. This hearing is closed, and we will proceed to the next hearing. The next hearing is on 1605E, petition for creation of a pilot project for dedicated trial court judicial dockets for large claim business and commercial cases. The speakers that I currently have listed are presenters Laura Brenner, Nora, is it Gierke? Okay. Judge Morrison, Paul Swanson, Judge Neese, Judge Stark, Skylar Croy, and Matthew O'Neill. That's the lineup I currently have. Now, as always, I welcome other people to speak if they wish to, but we'll wait till this list of speakers is heard from, and then you can decide whether there's something you wish to add. All right, with that, Laura Brenner, if you would please come forward.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court. First, thank you for having this hearing. Thanks for listening and getting some comments about the pilot program. It's been going on for a while, and it's an important issue. I wanted to also thank the committee. It's a voluntary committee made up of judges from around the state and practitioners who handle all types of clients. I'm currently the chair. We've got Judge James Morrison, Judge Michael Abrahamian, Judge Michael Fitzpatrick, Attorney Paul Swanson, who's here today, and Attorney Nora Gierke, who's here today. You'll hear from several of them today. You know, I wanted to talk that we are an advisory committee to this court. So we aren't an advocate committee. We're an advisory committee. So we gather we gather the information as best we can, and we're presenting it. And one of the things we are doing today, and with our submissions, is advising the court that we believe the program should be extended for another 2-year period. And I wanted to tell you why, and I wanted to tell you today what we plan to do during that 2-year period that may be a little different than what we've done before, and why it's worth it to have 2 more years to develop this program and then to give a final our final advice to this court. We had some challenges starting up the program. I think we talked about those in the submissions. I'm not going to belabor those. But it took a while to get the program going. We started out with just a few courts. As soon as we expanded it, we're trying to get some other courts to try to do it. Milwaukee County would be nice to have at some point. We haven't gotten it yet, but we were close. But just as we expanded it to Dane County and several other counties, we ran into COVID. And during COVID, the priority of the court system was, and it should have been, to keep the courts going, and it wasn't this program. So it interrupted sort of the flow. Just as this program got started, it interrupted the flow. It interrupted what we could do. It's another reason to extend the program for another 2-year period. But what I wanted to sort of concentrate mostly on, I'm splitting my discussion today with Attorney Gierke. But what I wanted to concentrate on was what we want to do in the next 2 years. First of all, we'd like to expand the committee. The committee is just shorthanded. We're very busy group of lawyers and judges, and we've lost a couple judges. We lost Judge Brennan to the Seventh Circuit. We lost John Rothstein, has retired. And frankly, we're a little shorthanded always. Mm-hmm. We've got some attorneys and some others who have said, gee, I'd like to help out. I'd like to be on this committee. That includes Attorney Matt O'Neill. He's here today to give a few comments. Attorney Jeff Mandel, he just started an organization called Law Forward. He said he'd like to be on this committee, and he'd be willing to do that. Attorney Joe Good, he's an attorney that represents franchisees and other small businesses in Milwaukee. He was willing to do it, but I wouldn't limit it to just attorneys. I'd like to see other members of the judiciary get involved in our committee. I think we could use a few more voices, especially from other parts of Wisconsin. I'd like to get their experience. So it'd be nice if we could get a few more judges on the committee as well. Other state courts also say, gee, your business court, as you get it started, might want to include members of the business community or members of the community at large. We could use a non-lawyer or judge to talk about the impact of this type of program on Wisconsin. Community leaders, a professor, perhaps. I think that we could easily get a professor from Marquette in Wisconsin to be involved in the program, perhaps somebody that with experience in the business school.
Attorney Brunner, I'm looking at the court's order from June 29th, 2022, that gave your committee an additional year to either file a formal rule petition, asking the court to amend the rules, to adopt a permanent business court, or advise the court in writing that it recommend the court to permit the pilot project to expire. And I have two questions regarding our order from now over 2 years ago. One is you're telling us now that if we just give you some more time, you'll be able to bring other people with other expertise into the fold. Number one, why didn't you do that between 2022 and 2024? I understand that there were COVID issues, but those were certainly starting to die down by that period of time. So that's my first question. Why didn't you do that last time? And second, why didn't you file either a formal rule petition asking us to adopt a permanent rule or recommend that we have the pilot program expire? That sounds like it's like a two-part question. Like, happy to repeat any part of it.
No, I'll try to remember both. Okay. Let's see if I can take the first one. Is the second one, why didn't we file it in 2023, or why haven't we just said let's make it permanent right now?
We'll address that one first. Why didn't you do what we asked you to do, which was you had two options by July 1st of 2023, on or before July 1st of 23. We asked you to do two things. We asked you either to file a formal rule petition or recommend to us that the court allow the pilot project to expire. Why didn't you do that?
Why in 2020? To be honest with you, we should have done that in 2023. We all missed that date. All of us, the judges on the committee and all of us, looked at that because we all thought that it was 2024. We thought this is a two-year pilot program. Our eyes all glazed over that. The program was going to go for 2 years, and nobody thought, oh, gee, after 1 year, we're going to do a report to the court about whether it should be permanent after 1 year when the program was going to go another two.
But it wasn't only 1 year because the program had been in existence for several years up to that point.
Fair.
2017, so it had been, I'm not great at math, but I think it's 5 years between 17 and 22, right?
Sure, but during that five-year period, we had COVID. And during that period, I will say two things. It took longer to get the program going than we thought. We were up against a lot of challenges, not only administrative, with getting the codes in the system, getting the word out to courts. We still don't have the word out to enough practitioners throughout Wisconsin that there's this program. I get calls all the time about, do we still have this court, this pilot program going, and where is it? Because they can't find the information. It's hard to find on the website. I made some suggestions. They made some improvements, actually, but it could be better. Even my own assistant yesterday said, where is that information? And I thought, gosh, if I can't even, we need to get this information out better. So there was the challenges of just getting it going the first 2 years, and then we had COVID interrupt. And COVID was more than just a two-year period. It really took a toll on our system, and I know you know that. But even now, we're really just getting going again in our law firms and in our practices. We're almost now back to normal. So that took a huge sort of chunk of our efforts on this pilot program. And I think all of our courts, I was on a program to get courts going back in Milwaukee. Our focus wasn't on the business court pilot program. It was just getting litigants through the system.
Do we know, Attorney Brenner, if the cases are moving along more quickly in business court versus regular circuit court in the different counties?
They appear to be, I don't have perfect data. Attorney Gerke is going to present that, but according to the litigants that have taken part in the program, they, by a vast majority, believe that it's moving faster. And one of the things I would like to measure, if we can expand the program for another 2 years, is not only how fast are we getting the cases to conclusion, but how fast are we getting through motions? How are the judges really applying the procedures? How often are they providing or following the procedures? And how fast are motions being handled and resolved? It's one of the things other state business courts have addressed and suggested that pilot programs like ours measure. And that's something I would like to do. And I'm not sure I answered all of your questions. The second one was, why haven't you done it? The answer in the last 2 years, the answer is we should have. It would have been nice. We in the last 2 years, I think we put our efforts and our focus on a training program that we were trying to build through the state court. It took a lot longer than we thought it would. But with lessons learned from the last 2 years, what I'm saying to the court is we could use some additional personnel on our committee with different voices to address some of these concerns. And we like to do some other things, too. But this is lessons learned from this period of time.
Fortunately, there aren't statutes of limitation or repose in a rule petition. And if there were, you probably wouldn't be here today to argue your position. So we're here to hear you out, I believe.
Thank you.
Counsel, what would you say are a few of the successes of the program, and what are a couple of the challenges that you've experienced that you are working on addressing?
Yeah, I think some of the successes of the program are going to be borne out in the information that Attorney Gerke is going to talk about.
Great.
But I can tell you just to start, after the participants go through the program, they're given a survey, and many of them answer that survey, and they're asked all kinds of questions about, did they think this part of the program was good? Did they think that part? Do they think it's worth it? When they're asked, is it worth it? Should we make this permanent? The vast majority say yes.
But aren't those people already incentivized to do that? I mean, it's the people who you are serving, who are being best served by this program, who are filling out the surveys. I'll tell you my biggest concern, and I look forward to having you address this, is I spent most of my career before I was on the bench advocating for crime victims, women and children who had been victims of abuse and assault and neglect. And as a circuit court judge, I presided over criminal cases here in Dane County. I had 1,700 cases a year. I would get 5 new cases a day. At one point when I was in the Dane County DA's office, I had more child sexual assault and child abuse cases than anyone in the office. I can't think of a group of people that deserve to move to the head of the line in the court system than young children who have been victims of assault, abuse, and neglect. And it's hard for me not to look at this business court scheme in a view other than we are creating two tiers of justice here, one for people who have a lot of money, one for businesses who are well-heeled, one for corporations who can hire really good, effective lawyers and can come before the Supreme Court and get a rule passed so that they can skip to the head of the line, and another system for those who have nothing, who are scraping by, who are preyed upon, who struggle to have the smallest voice in our system. And I have a very, very hard time reconciling a system that is created that seems to me to be fundamentally unfair to a huge swath of our society.
Okay, I want to absolutely address that because I think it includes several misperceptions about what this is. This is, one, absolutely unequivocally not a priority court for businesses. This is a court, it is a specialty court, not unlike traffic court, family court, drug court. It is a specialty court, and it is designed not to disadvantage that group. I agree with you. That group should move through the system more quickly than any other group, than any of these other groups, more quickly than small claims, more quickly than traffic, more quickly than family law, although family law, which I practiced for a year and a half with my father before I went back.
God bless you.
Thank you, yes. Yeah, he watched you defeat me in tennis a couple times. Thank you for that as well. But after that, I started as
Can you believe that, Justice Bradley?
No.
After I started as a business attorney, doing mostly business cases, at a very large law firm, I moved to my father's firm for a year and a half and did family law. And I learned family law. I couldn't just start family law. I'll tell you that the family court, specialty court, means something. It gets those people, which includes children, which includes issues concerning domestic violence, it gets those cases through the system more quickly. And it made a lot of sense. I had to learn family law very quickly through a bunch of people. And those lawyers, they're just as good as the lawyers that do business law. I'm very biased, but my father's probably the best trial lawyer I've ever seen, and he concentrated in family court. So it is not about prioritizing something over another. It's about creating a specialty court. And I respectfully submit to you that the evidence from other states shows that creating specialty dockets moves all the dockets more quickly through the system. The cases that you talked about wouldn't be in the family court or the traffic court or the small claims court or the other courts that we have or the bankruptcy courts. Those are all excellent courts. But the system moves better altogether when you don't have cases clogging those courts. And the business, it is time for a business court or a commercial court docket so those cases stop clogging the courts and getting caught up and plugging up other courts. The judges that handle business court cases don't handle only business court cases. They also usually have, I think for all of them, they have other dockets too. So they aren't pushing something aside to handle these. But I think the bigger point is, and I think the information from other states is bearing this out, that specialty courts are working. And children's court in Milwaukee County is working, and drug court's working, and traffic court's working. That's just where the law is going. We're just becoming more specialists. I couldn't do a family court case today. I can't do a criminal court case today. And I think that the creation of these specialty dockets just recognizes that reality.
Attorney Brenner, are you finished?
Yep, thanks.
One of the principal criticisms from the opponents to your petition echo what Justice Kurofsky just said, that somehow children's court, family court, treatment courts, probate court, they're somehow different, and there's something different and nefarious happening with the business court pilot project. I've read everything that was submitted by everyone, and other than these accusations, I'm not seeing anything procedurally that leads me to draw a distinction between the business courts and what I know best, besides business law, is children's law. As I mentioned earlier in the prior hearing, when I stepped foot as a judge in children's court, that was the first time I set foot in that court. And I thought to myself, you know, I really admire my colleagues around the state who handle all these different areas of law. But I watched my colleagues, Judge Simple, Judge Malmstadt, retired at the time, but felt like he was there almost full time, some of the time, And I watched everybody and I thought, wow, they've really developed expertise in the law that enabled them to handle the cases which Justice Grofsky just mentioned involving abused and neglected children a lot of the time, handle those cases quickly because they knew the law so well. So I remember distinctly my first day on the bench at Children's Court. I had 22 cases, which was a lot. But they had piled up despite our best efforts during my training period. I was slow at the beginning, but as I developed my own expertise in that area of law, I was able to much more quickly handle those cases, which is better for the litigants, as Justice Grofsky mentioned. So I'm kind of speechifying, but I do have a question at the end of my speech. I'm not seeing anything in the materials that anyone has provided to suggest that there is any kind of preferential treatment given to big business interests. Could you tell me if there's anything procedurally that is giving preferential treatment that's putting business interests at the front of the line ahead of children or people who have probate matters or people who have family law matters or any other types of matters that are heard by these types of specialty courts?
No, nothing is putting, and first of all, when we're talking about this, people are talking about big business, and I think you'll hear from some of our practitioners today, this is nothing about big business. The business court, the commercial court's about business to business, so I get a little triggered when somebody says, oh, it's about big business. No, you're talking about it in the terms of what other people say, so I did want to say that. Absolutely not. There's nothing that would give preference to anybody. There's no preferential treatment. There's no prioritization here of these types of cases, the business-to-business commercial cases, as compared to any of the other specialty dockets or any of the other specialty areas that are coming up at all. It's just a specialty area that has developed. We're recognizing that now. We recognize it as practitioners. The community recognizes it. You've heard it from the 8,000 folks that the WMC speaks with. You're hearing it from litigators and actual people that this is a specialty area. It should be treated as a specialty docket, just like the ones you mentioned, but not in a priority way, just as another docket way.
So help me understand that a little bit, because I share Justice Karofsky's concerns. If this business pilot program is not extended, would that judge who was serving and hearing those business pilot cases continue in a civil docket, or would they be reassigned to a criminal or children's court docket, to the best of your knowledge? Because I'm having a hard time understanding how this all plays out.
Yeah, so as part of this pilot, there hasn't been any judge that has just been assigned to the commercial court, to a commercial court docket. So all of the judges have also agreed. They volunteered to take on an extra docket. So they're taking on another docket at the same time as this one. So it's not necessarily just the civil docket. Some of them may have different dockets at the same time, but this isn't the sole docket they've taken on as part of this program.
So Wisconsin has long been a leader in specialty courts and a variety of things, and has come up with innovative ideas on how to do a number of things, whether it's a veterans court or hopefully additional, I hope, mental health courts, or if it's a drug treatment court or domestic violence court. There are a whole host of courts that Wisconsin has come to be known as a leader in. How does Wisconsin fare when it comes to a business court? Are we the lone court out there and no one else thinks this is a good idea? Are we viewed as a leader once again in this kind of initiative? Do only one or two other states, or maybe half of the United States, have business courts? Tell me where we are in the lineup. Are we really an outlier?
We are a bit of an outlier, except until we got the pilot program. And then we joined probably what seems to be the majority of courts, the majority of states. Appear to be about 27 states that have some sort of commercial court or commercial court docket. No, I shouldn't say commercial court. We're talking about a docket. that have a commercial court docket, including most of the states in the Midwest surrounding us. There's a great law review that we tried to submit from Indiana about their experience. Minnesota has a form. Cook County has a form. Most of the states around us have a commercial court docket, but 27 states are either have adopted a permanent program, some are about to adopt a permanent program. I know Utah is about to adopt one. We'll add it to the ledger. So more than half the states are either examining this issue or have decided after examining it to adopt it. And one of the things I did want to tell this court is we have so many more resources from those states' experience that we didn't have before. We wanted to submit to the court some of the training materials that other states have developed that we could use in the next 2 years that would give us better guidance so we can learn from what they have done. But no, we would be in the minority if we just decided to abandon this after all this investment and after all these volunteers have given so much time and thought into this. But we do have a lot more resources that we could look at in the next 2 years.
Council, page 3 of your petition indicates that approximately 25 states maintain commercial dockets of some form, and that petition was filed on May 30th. So since then, have there been two additional ones? You give the number 27, and if so,
yeah, Texas,
what are they?
Texas came in, and Utah is about to adopt one. I think we submitted a citation to a website that keeps track. It's hard. I mean, they're coming very quickly. It is very innovative, but I think it is definitely the wave of the future. But we're trying to keep track of all of them. Some of them are more limited. Some do them in different ways. And that was another thing that we'd love to do in the next 2 years is what are these other state courts doing? Some of them are appointing judges in different ways. Some of them are including different topics in their docket. We would love the time and need the time to examine that to make an even better recommendation to this court.
Why haven't the problem in part is this. When this issue was last before us, the mantra was there's no evidence. I mean, I have a file that thick that said there's no evidence. And it seems, and then the response is, well, other courts are doing it and have around the country, and there are favorable comments. And in looking at today's materials, I see some of the same kind of criticism. There is no evidence. Here today are a number of folks that may want to speak, so I'm going to select someone who filed a comment that's not here today. And how about let's go with Judge Joanne Klappenberg. And the third comment that she made, now I'm going to refer to this. I assume you've had an opportunity to read some of these materials, and if not,
I have.
I want to be helpful so you can locate it. Okay.
Oh, I'm just trying to find. Sorry, I'm trying to find which one I can.
Let me speak generically. Then
sure.
It looks like it was. I'm sorry, August 29, 2024.
Thank you.
If you have them.
I've got it. Yes, thanks. That helped me.
She starts out, sometimes I have this phrase when I like or dislike something, strong words to follow, right? Well, she starts out, I write in strong opposition, so that caught my attention. But she has 4 points, and the third point is the one that I want to discuss with you because it combines the concern about lack of evidence and your point aptly made that you're not a priority court, you're a specialized court, right? So in her third comment, she says this. Third, a separate business court that prioritizes, she says, business and commercial disputes shares no similarity to the various diversion courts that have been developed based on evidence to address the debilitating societal and individual effects of mental illness and substance use in the context of criminal conduct. There is no evidence, she says, of any societal or individual benefit to prioritizing business and commercial disputes over all other disputes, many if not most of which are no less consequential to the parties involved. Now, you've addressed this prioritizing concern, but you haven't addressed the her assertion that it shares no similarity to the various diversion courts that have been developed based on evidence. So I keep on hearing that no evidence, no evidence. How do you respond to that other than the way you responded to it the last time, or the response last time was, well, other courts, other states have found it beneficial. So what about Wisconsin? What kind of evidence do you have to address her concern that it may be a specialty court, but it shares no similarities to the various other courts because it's not based on evidence?
Yeah, I respectfully disagree with the judge.
That's again, why I want to give you an opportunity to respond to it.
Mm-hmm. And I had some stronger words, not in
strong
order,
words
but there
to
was,
follow.
There have been some strong words thrown at me over the last several years as the chair, and I've tried to address them all. So here, but this one, let me tell you, I think there is evidence. I think there are data points, definitely, that are existent not only in other states. With the reference to other states isn't to say we're not going to look at what's going on in Wisconsin. The reference to other states is if you look at what's happening there, it was so similar to what we're addressing here. And, in fact, the criticisms that those other states had were so similar to the ones that we had here and that were addressed with a pilot program. But I shouldn't have said we don't. If I did say that before, that was the only evidence, I was wrong. We have a lot of evidence. Over the last bunch of years during the pilot program, we took surveys of every single case, and there were a lot of many, many respondents who answered many questions and said, we rank this very highly. We value this. This helped us. But those aren't the only data points. We have to look not only at what our longtime judges have said, and we have to look at what all the judges have said, not just a few. Some are for it, but we've had some that have experience in this program, and some that have thoughts about that, but we should look at what data we do have comes from the practitioners and the parties. We have attorneys who've been speaking about this, many of whom signed on to the letter in support saying, this has become a specialty area. Please listen to us. We're the voice of our clients. We need some help here. This is important.
Do you have any, my sense is you don't have any what I would call raw data. How fast does this get, what's the need? How fast does this case get through the courts in comparison to how fast it used to get to courts? Break it down, what kind of motions are being filed, how fast do those motions get through compared to what you would like to see and what has been in the past. That kind of data you don't yet have,
I don't have
do
actuarial data. We do have some data that the court, that these cases are moving quicker through the system when we have the information and the data points from the litigants, who many of whom, like Attorney Gerke and Attorney Swanson and I, who carry some mostly business court cases but some others, who can say, yes, they're moving faster when they have a specialty docket dedicated to these. Those are the data points we have. We have a lot of voices that are saying yes, and the surveys that we're taking seem to bear that out. And the information we're getting from those surveys is very similar to those other states who did have a budget. We're doing this, remember, without a budget. We can continue to do it without a budget. We can. And we can collect better data without a budget, and it's one of the things I do want to do in the next 2 years. And even find out, again, some of the suggestions was even get data to see if motions are being determined faster and things like that. But the data about cases moving through the system at a year or less is very consistent with the data from other states that says, yes, the system cases moved quicker, business cases moved quicker, almost, I think the number was 783 days faster That seems to be borne out by the data we're getting through just the pilot program, which only includes a limited number of counties so far.
And do we know how many cases move through that quickly?
How many? We do have the numbers on how many cases have moved and what their timing is in the information that Attorney Gerke will present. Yes.
I'd like to interrupt to give Justice Dallet the opportunity.
Thank you. Attorney Brenner, it's my understanding that these surveys were given to every person or every attorney that had a case in business courts, and so maybe the same attorney at the end of the case answering the question again. Right? So these may be, we have no idea how many.
Justice Dallet, I'm going to interrupt you because I don't know why, but we can't hear you very well, and I don't think it's just me. So if you could start over with your question and really enunciate, that would be helpful, I think, to everyone who's trying to hear you.
Okay. Thank you. Is this better?
Yes, considerably
okay.
So.
So my question is, the survey was given to every attorney at the end of their case in business court. Therefore, it necessarily includes the same people answering the question multiple times. That's my understanding, Attorney Brenner. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I think that's incorrect. You just get the survey at the end of the case.
Correct. But if you have five cases, you get five surveys.
So she's saying
you,
the same
Attorney
litigants...
Brenner,
and
right,
same
right.
lawyers are answering the same questions.
I don't mean the
that
same
could litigants. Be. I don't have the evidence to say that that's not true. I don't think the evidence will bear that out, but I don't think it's just a limited number of attorneys. I think we do have, Justice Dallet, the number of lawyers. Now, you'll never get the number of the real true number of lawyers that come through the court because I will come through the court and get the help of several lawyers who are with me. I don't know if each of them got the survey. Attorney Dykstra, who's joined me today, and I are working on a case. I don't know if each of us would have gotten a survey. I don't believe so. I think it's just one per party. But I don't think it's a limited number of commercial court practitioners who would have answered that survey. So I don't think that would limit the number. So.
Okay, that's not really what I'm asking. It's my understanding, and I've spoken with the person who gathers these statistics, so unless he's wrong, my understanding is at the conclusion of a case, the attorney is given the survey.
Yes.
If you, Attorney Brenner, have five cases in business court over the course, and there's only 279 total in all these years, but if you, Laura Brenner, happen to have 10 of those cases, 10 of 279, you have answered a significant portion of these statistics, which say your belief that this is a good thing. So in terms of the data itself, it seems to have some flaws.
I can see. I do not believe that the data would bear that's happening out. I think we have a significant number of lawyers, not the same name coming up over and over again who have appeared in the business court. So I don't think that's happened. Could conceptually that have happened? Sure, but do I think that happened in these particular courts? No, I don't. But even if I was in five courts, five different cases with five different clients, I would have had very similar or very different circumstances unless I had the same judge and the exact same client and the exact same dispute.
And almost every case, there are people who are, one person's happy, one person's unhappy, sometimes they're equally unhappy,
yes.
Rarely are they both happy when they leave court.
No, so I think it would have still, if I had had the benefit of being in the business court five times with five different clients with five different conclusions and answered the survey five times, I would have in good faith answer that survey honestly to the best of my ability about that case. But I don't think that is what
Attorney
happened.
Attorney Brenner, to your knowledge, before a family court was established in any county in this state, do you know if surveys were sent out or any manner of data collection occurred before the Wisconsin Supreme Court would allow those judicial districts to continue having specialty court like family court?
I don't know. I was trying to do some research on that issue because I do think the family court has been so valuable. Again, my short experience in it showed me that specialty court is fantastic and where it is shown and runs. But I do not know the answer about whether they had survey or data or the number of voices that we have for this court. I don't know what they had then either.
To your knowledge, was there any requirement of collecting data or conducting surveys before the Wisconsin Supreme Court would allow probate courts to be established around the state of Wisconsin?
I don't believe so, but
how about Children's Court in Milwaukee County?
I don't believe that.
Any of the specialty courts that we've mentioned? How about felony court?
I don't believe so, no.
Homicide sexual assault court?
I don't believe so.
Gun court in Milwaukee?
I don't believe so.
I'm not aware of any, but I thought I'd ask. Yeah,
no, I am not. I've looked.
Thank you.
I was looking, and I was trying to find it, and I could not find it either. I did not believe that was required.
I have a follow-up to that, because I think it might just be me that I'm sensing a shift in your argument. Maybe it's not, so I want to give you an opportunity to respond to this. But I do think that from my reading of what took place in the 1605 order, and a time before I got on the court, was that one of the arguments for the business court was that, and I'm going to throw out a different category here, was that they were going to be more like problem-solving courts. And by problem-solving courts, I mean like a veterans court or a drug court or an OWI court or a drug court, which in my mind are different than some of the distinctions Justice Bradley is asking you about, right, felony, misdemeanor, right, that the problem-solving courts were developed to get at very distinct problems, oftentimes addictions or the trauma that underlies addiction, right? And it seemed to me that when the business court idea was first introduced in this state, that a lot of the supporting arguments were like these, was that a business court would be very similar to what I'm calling a problem-solving court. And I think that for many, many reasons, and there may be no one better in the state to talk about this than Judge Lisa Stark, who has done so much work on problem-solving courts in the state and I think could spend the rest of the day explaining to us the difference between how the business court works and the problem-solving court works.
For sure.
But I'm hearing you shift today, and I'm hearing you not talk as much about the similarity between a business court and a problem-solving court, but you are instead drawing more of an analogy, or you're telling us that what is similar is a business court to traffic court or a domestic violence court or probate,
yeah.
Child abuse,
gun, family.
Thank you.
Homicide, sexual assault.
Thank you. And I think there's a nuance there, but I want to make sure I understand what your argument is today.
Yeah, I don't practice in those areas, and commend Judge Stark for work in those areas. I don't practice in those areas, so I don't think I appreciate the difference enough in a problem-solving court. I don't think that the basis behind this was a problem-solving court where we get people together and solve a problem in a unique way because somebody has a serious problem that should be addressed. I think it was more analogous to the other kinds of specialty courts. I don't mean to shift. I don't think that was our original idea, but I don't know enough about those types of problem-solving courts. I think of all courts as problem-solving courts. But I think what we were pointing out when we pointed out those courts are those dockets where that specialty dockets really work. And we haven't had a lot of dockets where somebody said that was a horrible idea. It's just not working. And for this pilot program, we're getting really good reviews. People who are using it like it and think that it should be another specialty docket.
Well, let me just ask one more follow-up then. Then if we are, if what your argument is, what you are asking us to do is to look at the business court like the specialty courts, one of the big differences here is that in the specialty courts, the electors of that county, and I'm just going to use Dane County as an example because it's what I know best. There are 17 judges in Dane County. In Dane County, we have three divisions. There's a civil division. There's a juvenile division. The juvenile division, they handle some civil, and then there's a criminal division, so there's three. But those the judges themselves decide who's going to serve in each of those divisions, right?
But the difference here is with the business court is that it's left to the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court to decide who it's going to be. And I've never understood why there should be that distinction with this type of court.
So when we started this pilot, that was one of the ways to do it. The Chief Justice, along with, and I think the program was amended, the Chief Justice gets input from the district, district chief judge for who is going to be appointed to that court as part of this pilot. But I can tell you that in examining what other courts do and what we want to examine in the next 2 years is courts do it in a whole lot of different ways. Some courts stick with their usual process that the chief or the district judge will select which court, which judge handles which docket. Some of these state court judges or state court docket programs do it that way. Some do it different ways. Sometimes they stay on for a few years and rotate off. They said some of the characteristics are you want somebody who's going to volunteer, who has some experience in this, or who is going to very much commit to getting it. But there are different ways to appoint the commercial court judge, and we'd love to examine those ways and make a recommendation to this court about the ways to do it. This was a good way to do it. We think it's operating very well, but it's not the only way, but it was the way that we selected to do it for this program.
Just to be clear, in case any of my colleagues think that somehow people are being forced into this docket and that I'm hand-picking people on a particular agenda or something, that couldn't be further from the truth. In fact, we had one jurisdiction that didn't want to do it anymore. And I said, okay, you don't need to. So to be clear, people volunteer for this, and it's not me imposing my will on anyone to participate in this program.
Attorney Bremer, I just wanted to ask you, you've spent, first of all, just thank you for serving on this committee and this. I presume the clock is running, but you're not being paid by clients, so this is a significant expenditure of your own personal time. There's different arguments on both sides of this issue. I also know that you've, reading the submissions, I think, taken some unfair personal attacks on this. So I want to thank you for the volunteer time you've put in the midst of that. Maybe just give you an opportunity to say why you think this is so worth your time, why it is that you're passionate enough about this to spend your personal time and effort to see this succeed.
And it's not only been my time, it's been the voluntary time of the entire committee. All of them have been volunteers, and as Chief Justice Ziegler said, the volunteers of the time of the judges as well to get up to speed as part of this program. But, I would like to take the opportunity to say I am not aligned with the Koch brothers, and I am not part of big business. I am not meeting with big business interests. All of those things are... were levied against me and the committee, and they're just absolutely untrue. And it would be part of the program the next 2 years, if allowed to be extended, to get the word out about what this program is and who we are, who the judges are who have decided to take on a commercial court docket. The reason that I think it is important is the same reason that I think my father thought that having a family court docket was important. This has become a specialty area with reoccurring issues over and over again, and a specialty docket in this area will help the litigants, some of whom are just small companies, most of whom, those are the folks that are getting pummeled in court when up against somebody with bigger resources. They're the ones that need a judge that knows when they're being abused or when that motion shouldn't be heard, or when there needs to be an injunction, or not 50 more ESI terms, or 40 more ESI custodians. And I know that happens in all cases, but business court cases are different because of the issues that reoccur over and over again. And because this has become a specialized area, and I don't want to steal the thunder from some of the folks who are going to speak about that, but it warrants the specialty court to help those litigants so that they can feel like Wisconsin is a place that they can bring their case, that they can put in their contracts to say the venue for the disputes will be resolved in Wisconsin, that they won't run out of money because the case has been pending for 3 years. I mean, those are the reasons that we need this type of specialty docket to help those folks. And I think it will help the entire system because it will move all of the cases through quicker. Business court cases tend to have more attorneys and more stuff and more motions and more, used to be boxes full of stuff, but now it's computer files. But it clogs up the system, and it hurts the other cases that are moving through the system, including the cases that Justice Karofsky talked about. And this would help, and that is why I'm on this committee. That's why the other committee members are on this committee, to address those types of issues. We think this specialty court docket makes sense, but we are going to make a recommendation to this court after examining all those things about whether it makes sense to make that program permanent. But we are asking for 2 more years because we think it's quite worthwhile.
All right. Well, we have a host of people to hear from. I don't know if there's anything left for them to say after that.
I apologize to all of them, but I thank the court for listening.
You answered very important questions. I think Attorney Gehrke is up next.
Attorney Brunner, your pen fell on the floor. We've had some ink.
Attorney O'Neill says I've left a big mess.
Okay.
So, Counselor, we received your submission dated yesterday, today.
Yes, Justice.
So it did not get to our commissioner until this morning, and so he promptly forwarded it to us. I wanted to make sure at the outset that each of my colleagues had the opportunity to review that.
I have not.
Received but not fully reviewed.
Yes.
Okay. Received but not fully reviewed. Is that everyone's?
Received and scanned. Just scanned through it.
Okay.
It's a rather large packet, so I apologize for
making. I wanted you to know the lay of the land. If you thought we got it yesterday, we got it right before the hearing started.
I will try to cover some of the information in there and highlight what I want to address as Ms. Brunner promised. But may it please the court, my name is Nora Gehrke. I am a practitioner in what I would call commercial business cases. I started my career at Reinhart Berner Van Duren and had the pleasure of working with Laura, but I left and formed my own practice in 2012, so I've been practicing what I call boutique litigation, doing some of the same work, but I have a little bit of a different perspective in terms of the type of cases that I handle. I would say more than half of my practice I do product liability on the defense side, which would not come under the purview of a business court. And yet I am working on this committee because I do believe the business court is a productive solution to some of the concerns that in business cases I have seen, because I have worked on some. I have, full disclosure, I've worked on one of since the business court has been created. It was through Waukesha County, and I had one business court case. I represented what I would not call the big business side of that case. My client was an individual family-owned business, is a franchisee, was seeking relief. And so just to give the court a little bit perspective in terms of the different types of attorneys that are practicing in the business court, they are not all, I think, falling under the same heading. When we use the term big business in these cases, this is business to business, but some of these clients are coming from what I would call a small business perspective, and I myself am a small business. So that's the perspective I'm coming from. Your Honors, I want to get right to, I think, what was promised when Ms. Brunner was giving her, when Attorney Brunner was giving her comments, the statistics. So in our submission, we restate some of the statistics from the surveys, but we also attached what we received from the court. The methodology, I think, to address Judge Dalit's point of questioning is that, yes, each time an attorney comes through a case, they're given the opportunity to respond to survey questions, and it's voluntary. So we rely on those attorneys to give us their perspective. When we talk about what is the evidence, I believe that is evidence. If I were, as a trial lawyer in a case, part of the evidence that I would put up is witnesses who give their own personal experience, their firsthand knowledge of experiencing something. So when we point to evidence, I believe that it is valuable to ask the practitioners who beneath that really are the representatives of the litigants. And so when we were seeking out those evaluations, that was the motivation, is we want to hear
I'm just looking at the, just on page 4 of your submission from this morning. I'm not sure under the rules of evidence any of this would come in. It seems just highly speculative to me. I somewhat believe this to be true. I slightly believe this to be true. I do not believe this at all. I'm not sure I would let the survey that I have read in its totality back a few years ago in as evidence in my courtroom.
So I think to call it evidence, what I would view this as is if, and as we said, we did this with very few resources and no budget, but
I wonder what the validity is. Someone, I'll just tell you, I spent 10 years at the National Conference of Bar Examiners working on the bar exam and how valid it is to have an instrument that actually tests what it is that you want to test. And I don't think that this data that you have put together would pass a freshman year of stats class. I mean, it is some random questions asked to a very select group of people. And it is because of that, I fear, it is really skewed.
I hear, Your Honor, your concern is that there's a bias somehow, that the answers of the questions somehow are motivated because they've participated.
Validity and bias are two different things. Validity is, are you actually, whatever it is you are seeking to test, whatever question it is you are seeking to ask, is it answering the question that you want it to ask? And I don't see that here.
So I would advocate that there are different concerns that have been raised about the business court. And one of them is the perception in the community, right? What we've heard from some of the critics is this is going to create a negative perception among the community, among litigants, among the judiciary. And so I would advocate, Your Honor, that this survey is not intended to be an actuarial level of return on, for example, what is the actual data of days through court compared through, you know, the rest of our court system. We don't, frankly, have the resources for that at this point. I would say we want that. We want that kind of data. What this survey, I think, measures is the actual litigants' perceptions of how did the court perform on a number, 9 different factors, which as litigants, I think we express concern about, and those. I want to go through those categories in talking about why it's important to measure these sorts of things. And the question was framed as, do you believe that the business court experience and case that you participated in performed better than your experience in other general civil dockets? And why is that important? I think in terms of why do we care what the litigants say? Why do we care what the attorneys say? It's not the only measure of whether the court is performing, but it is an important measure to say, do the attorneys have experience within the court system that validates that it's doing what it's trying to do?
I've got to tell you, the phrase preaching to the converted just is screaming out at me. It seems like the people you are asking are already the people who are using the system, and you haven't asked the other people. You can go through this. I've looked at it. I'm sure my colleagues have already looked at it. It feels just so skewed to me to as not even be helpful to me in making this decision. I'm just letting you know that.
The people who are using the business courts are not attorneys who only practice in the business court. As myself, I don't only practice in business court cases. So in terms of the idea that they only want to be in a business court and therefore they're predisposed to say that it practices better than being in a general civil court, I'm not sure that that's an accurate portrayal of the attorneys coming through. I've looked at the list of attorneys, in fact, who have participated in the business courts, and I know many of them personally, and I know that they do not only practice in business court settings. So I think, frankly, those attorneys having experiences in other dockets, in other specialty areas, gives them a unique perspective to be able to say, I can compare my experience when I'm practicing in a business court case versus my experience when I'm in a general civil docket. My analogy that came to mind when I kept thinking about, you know, why do we think this is going to work better than just having a general civil docket is, as I said, a good chunk of my practice is asbestos defense, and not within Wisconsin because we don't have enough of those cases, but in other jurisdictions where I practice, they have a specialty asbestos docket, so it's not just business court cases that benefit from an umbrella of specialty.
Attorney Gergi, how many members of the committee are there currently?
Someone said they weren't good at math, and I'm doing the
five,
in my head. I think five or six.
Okay.
Currently.
Are any of you paid for this work
No.
that you're doing? Do you receive any funding from big business special interests for this project?
No, I think we said that this is a purely volunteer position, and in terms of what benefit I'm getting from it, I practice in the state of Wisconsin. I practice for 26 years and counting. I have a good faith desire to see it function. And frankly, some of the concerns that I've heard I take seriously. I don't want there to be a perception that this is creating a value judgment of business is more important than other areas of law. It resonates with me when I hear that there are courts addressing very, very weighty and important cases like domestic violence. That's an area I've done pro bono work in. So certainly I don't want to create something that takes away from justice from other people. In terms of feedback and surveying, I do want to point out, you know, we surveyed the attorneys who participated. We don't have a mechanism to survey people who haven't participated in the business courts, but we have called for public comment at each of these hearings, I believe, and there have been some responses from the community, but this go-around, I don't think we've heard the type of negative response, and I take that to be significant because the longer this program has continued, what we're seeing, I think, is some of the fears, some in good faith, I understand why people would be cynical and have concerns. That's what we read was happening in all the other jurisdictions that implemented a business court, is some of these same concerns about creating two tiers of justice, creating an elitist type court system. Those were concerns that were heard in all of the other jurisdictions that have started this. But fortunately, what we're seeing is we haven't heard feedback from other litigants that they feel that they were somehow prevented from accessing the court system or prevented from accessing justice because there was a business court that existed.
Has the Wisconsin Supreme Court supplied or even offered any money to have the committee conduct a survey or a statistical analysis or provided you with a business analyst to conduct a valid survey that would satisfy the court about the evidence to support the business court?
So I think the surveys that we've done are valid in the sense that I don't have any reason to think that people lied or misreported. I do understand that they are not in the sense of a third-party scientific organization quality of survey. I want to acknowledge and thank that we do have the assistance of a court representative who has collected this data and reported it. So I don't want to undermine the work that that person has done, and we appreciate it. But in terms of funding, no. We have not been given access to any sort of funding that we could hire an outside social science type company that could come in. And I think social science surveys are not illegitimate. They are, in my practice, my cases, I don't typically use them, but I'm aware of them being used in other cases in terms of advertising cases, for example, where they survey groups of people and collect data on opinions and viewpoints. Again, I don't want to undermine the validity of we've asked the litigants what they think, and we're getting overwhelmingly positive responses. I think that is one piece of the story, but yes, we would love to have funding. We would love to have the ability to hire an outside expert who could come in and handle collecting data on a larger basis and give reports back to the court.
I have the same question for you, and I'm not going to go through the litany that I did with Attorney Brenner, but to your knowledge, did the Wisconsin Supreme Court ever commission studies, or did any court in the state of Wisconsin commission studies before the establishment of family law courts and probate courts and children's courts and gun courts and any of these other specialty division courts?
I don't probably have enough of a background to be able to answer that yes or no, but I can say to my knowledge, I don't have any information that that was a prerequisite to creating some of the courts. Another one that hasn't been mentioned that came to my mind is under the general umbrella of civil, we also have small claims court, which those cases are not unsimilar to the types of civil disputes. It's just that they are I think more efficiently handled in a different docket. And I don't think that's, you know, ever been viewed as nefarious. In fact, having participated in small claims cases and, you know, throughout my career, I can see the value of not having those in the same docket as a larger claims case or a business dispute, commercial dispute, because as Ms. Brenner pointed out, the commercial cases often involve, you know, more drawn-out discovery fights, more drawn-out motion practice, and I think it would take away from the litigants who are seeking, you know, an immediate resolution to a case that could be resolved in a day to make them sit through and wait on a docket that a commercial case might take, you know, 12 months to resolve. And that, to me, is the analogy here. It's not creating two tiers of justice. It's an organizational technique that lots of different courts have used successfully, and we're trying to follow through with what we've seen in other jurisdictions.
Counsel, at this point, is the participation, is it voluntary?
On the committee or in the business court?
In the business court. Yeah, we're not ordering you to spend your time here.
Yes, it's voluntary on the committee, but in the business court, if you file a case in a jurisdiction that has agreed to participate in the business court, there is a clerk who will, if you designate your case as an issue, we have the case codes through case filing where we designate what the issues in the case are. If a case is designated as one of the case codes that has been defined as falling under the purview of the business court, it automatically should get routed to be assigned to a business court docket, and then a judge assigned based on the selection of judges that has already taken place. However, there's two different ways that it can be not in the business court, even if you are one of the cases, there's two different avenues. That's one. The other is you can ask for your case to be treated as a business court case. If the litigants agree, they can petition the court and ask for it to be assigned. And I think that's happened on a number of the cases, but it's based on the litigants designating their case as one of the case codes that would fall within the purview. For the example that I used, the case that I participated in, I think involved multiple issues, as many commercial cases do. So we designated our case intentionally because one of the issues that arose was a dispute over a distribution franchise agreement.
Can the litigants agree not to be in the business docket if they choose?
I believe they can ask to be removed.
Are you aware of, is the committee aware of that happening? And if so, the frequency of it?
Firsthand, no, I'm not. I think we'd have to drill down to the individual dockets to find out that information.
So, in one sense, these are folks who generally are going to default into that into the business docket based on their kind of case, and then afterwards, you know, are surveyed about their feedback of it, and it's overwhelmingly positive, whether they meant to be there initially or not. That does seem like a pretty helpful data point in the way that most every time I seem to do anything in the world now, I get asked for a survey. sometimes those aren't statistically significant, but the reason why companies do them because it provides them feedback. And if it's terrible, usually that information probably would come At the very least, it would be constructive feedback, too.
That is certainly the intention behind us asking these survey questions, was to try to hear back from the litigants who had actually participated in these cases on some of these, you know, measures. And we haven't talked about the specifics. I know it's in the submission, and the justices can read, but the topics that we asked about are, do you perceive that this commercial court has provided judges with experience in the area at issue in the case, a case management process? And by the way, they are asking to compare it to the general commercial docket. So it's not just an open-ended question of, did you think we did a good job? It is with reference to the extent that you're comparing this, you're comparing it to a general commercial docket. So the topics are, did this commercial court experience provide you judges with experience in the subject matter in these commercial cases, a case management system that is better managing than the commercial court, limiting continuances or delays, addressing an appropriate settlement strategy, trial management. That was a bit of an outlier topic, and I think what we've discerned is not that many cases go to trial in this context. But to the extent that the answers seem to indicate that if they did go to trial, yes, the litigants were satisfied that it reduced delay and that provided a lower cost avenue. And most importantly, from our perspective, was the final question, number 9, which is, based on your experience in this commercial case, do you believe that the commercial court docket should become permanent? And we got an overwhelming, frankly, the highest of all those answering the survey, the highest positive response was 91% on average, gave some degree of support for the idea of, yes, we would like to see the commercial court docket become permanent.
Well, one other question, and I asked Attorney Bremer this, but I don't think she got an opportunity to fully address it, but I want to give you and maybe others an opportunity. So it's been around for 8 years now, roughly.
Or not maybe, quite yet.
Okay, we're getting there. But what are, you know, I mean, there's a few possibilities here. One, this is a bad idea and we should stop it. One is, this is a great idea and it's going really well. There might also be something in the middle that says this is a really solid idea. The implementation needs to work out some kinks, and there's things we can do better. And so my question to you is, where would you place it on that? And if there are suggestions that you think that things have maybe were in the way it's structured right now, are there ways it can be improved or should be improved in order to position it for success, if it's the right idea?
I think that of the three choices that you gave, I would put it on the end of the spectrum of, it's a great idea, but yes, certainly there's some things we should be looking at to improve it. And one thing that was mentioned by Attorney Brenner was, the thing that stood out to me is Milwaukee County not being a participant is something we should correct. I would like to see Milwaukee County join. In terms of, one of the critiques is, look, we don't have that much data because there aren't that many cases. Well, I think in part that's because we started small and we've expanded, but if one of the largest dockets in the state isn't part of this, then I think we're missing a piece, quite frankly, and I'd like to see that corrected. I know there were some discussions and efforts to try to make that happen, and it does seem like it could happen. If we give this another 2 years, that's one of the benefits of giving us additional time, is to allow Milwaukee County an opportunity to join in. And I think that would give us more data, more experience, and more opportunities to expand the participation. I also acknowledge that we need to expand throughout the state. I think one of the challenges that we need to work on is, having practiced throughout the state, not every court system is the same. And, you know, you look at some counties where they don't have the multiples of judges that they can rotate. They don't have rotations even. So there needs to be some acknowledgement that there's not necessarily going to be a one-size-fits-all and some flexibility for that. So I heard one of the questions was, hey, the way it's being done now with the Chief Justice selecting the judges, there's been some criticism of that. Could we look at something different? I would advocate, yes, we should consider alternatives to try to fit the model into what the needs of the different courts are. But that's not to say that that isn't something we could solve, and I'm confident that we could work to improve the way it's being run so that it provides access to more litigants, which I think is a benefit.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate the time.
We all appreciate your time.
Thank you, Justice.
Judge Morrison?
Good morning. May it please the court. I'd like to use my 5 minutes as productively as I can, and I'd like to cover a couple things. I'm very concerned about your concerns, Justice Garofsky. Last Thursday, I came back from the 10th anniversary of our Marinette County Treatment Drug Court, where we've had 126 participants, had more than 50 healthy babies born to the moms in the drug court. I presided over that court for 10 years.
Thank you.
And it's all the things you talked about, and it's so important, and it's the most important thing I've ever done. I'm sure about that. But I think there's a misunderstanding on the part of some of my friends on the court that we are somehow supplanting or moving aside normal cases to do these cases. And that's not true. I've been involved from the steering committee. I'm the supposed coordinating judge, which means all the business court cases go through my DCA, and I make sure that the proper people, proper judges, get actually assigned to a given case. The only reason I mention that is not because I'm important, but because I'm a conduit of information. We've had several business court judges who have asked to be relieved because they don't like to do it anymore. I get that. What we're trying to do, and what I think is very important to point out, is we want to put judges who are willing to spend the time, and this is an extra duty assignment virtually everywhere, spend the time to learn the issues that are unique to business disputes, and there are some, and to give them the time that is sometimes necessary. I'm going to give you one example of this. Last April, I was assigned a Brown County Business Court case. Three nurse anesthetists wanted to leave a hospital-based practice to go to work for an organization that had a standalone surgical practice. And they had proper employment contracts. They were seeking to leave at the end of their employment contract. Their employers were trying to stop them. You've all seen these cases a million times. But the reason I'm pointing this out is the people that were going to be affected by these nurse anesthetists being able to move or not were not the fat cat hospital practice, not the fat cat medical doctors involved. It was the 1,500 people who had scheduled surgeries, hip surgeries, other orthopedic surgeries in that standalone practice in the months of May and June who would not have been able to be served if that issue could not have been resolved. 1,500 people who could have their surgeries for half the cost of what it would cost in a hospital, and by the way, not have to be in the hospital where all the difficulties and problems of being involved in a hospital is. We were able to do that because it was a business court case, and I just made time for it on top of my normal docket. I'm not asking for anybody saying, oh, that's wonderful. The point is, as a business court judge, I understood the large ramifications of that case to lots of real people, Justice.
Yeah, and I hear you, and I appreciate everything that you're saying. Can I just ask one question?
Sure.
About that? Why couldn't you have done that otherwise? Like, why couldn't you have, you could have heard that case regardless? I'm not understanding what makes this different.
Excellent question, because it was a Brown County case, and I'm a Marinette County judge. But I'm a business court judge, and it's in the 8th District, so I can handle it in the 8th District. And because I'm one of the three judges right now in all of District 8 who have agreed to take these kinds of cases.
And frankly,
because my caseload is less than it is for my colleagues in Brown County.
So let me ask you another question then, okay? And that is that the people, like, and I mean this seriously with all due respect, but the people of Brown County didn't elect you because you didn't run for judge in Brown County. I'm sure if you ran for judge in Brown County, you would win by double digits, but you have not chosen to live there or to run. So that's just the facts that we are dealing with here. So they didn't, and so I have a difficult time with that you weren't elected judge in Brown County, you were elected judge in a different county.
Very good question, Justice. But we deal with that all the time. We move judges from county to county all the time. If I have a conflict...
It's reserve judges, by the way.
Well, of course, but even for non-reserve judges, I go to Oconto all the time when those two judges are conflicted out. We do that constantly. That's just part of what we do. So I hope... There's one other thing I want to remind this
court. Before you do that, do you think it's any different than when a court of appeal judge, for example, elected in District 4, ends up sitting on a panel with judges in District 3, perhaps because of a conflict or because of an imbalance in workload,
sure,
and they're helping out. And that judge wasn't elected by the voters of District 3, right?
Well, Justices, we have this peculiar thing that we are state employees, we have statewide jurisdiction, but we're elected locally. Whether we should be elected locally is a horse of a different color. I understand that. But the problem that you raise is a valid problem, but it's no different than we have to deal with all the time across the board.
Are the parties required to submit to you as their judge without any sort of consent or approval?
They have a substitution right, and that does not end. They have a substitution right, and they can substitute. They'll get another business court judge. You adopted a rule a couple years ago that require anybody who does juvenile work, juvenile court work, to take a specific curriculum of juvenile justice. And it's a specific set of courses that you have, the judicial education is specifically set up because you recognize that the kinds of things that kids face, the ACE traumas, the kinds of things they face, require that we have a special sensitivity for that. And nobody's upset about that. We embrace that opportunity. Justice Hagedorn?
Yeah, Judge Morrison, thanks for your work on this. I just wanted to ask you the same question I've asked some others, which is, and you've had an opportunity to express some of the things you think have gone well. Are there one to two things that you think could be improved with the program? Or do you have any sense for areas that, you know, or maybe strategic? Again, some of my colleagues and some of the writings that have been submitted are concerned whether this is effective and needed. And again, part of the response might be, we've learned some things and here's how we're going to improve it. And I just wanted to hear if you had any insight on that for us.
Well, yes, there are things we'd love to improve. We would like to expand it to the entire state. We tried to expand it to Milwaukee and to Dane. Milwaukee, because of they have a very different system. Justice Bradley, you were there. Justice Janet, you were there. You know that. It's a different system. And there's a pecking order that doesn't exist in Marinette County. We do everything. The two of us do everything. So we would like to have it expanded statewide, if we could. And we'd like to figure out what we have done poorly and what we have done well and improve the things that we are doing well. I will tell you this also, Justice Hagedorn. Wisconsin's known as a leader in a lot of judicial administration things. I remember, as I think some of you will recall, during COVID, we got Zoom up and running, and Wisconsin was kind of the envy of the country about how we were able to manage this crushing problem pretty well. There was a supervising judge in Los Angeles County who wrote a letter to the LA Times, and he says, "Why can't we keep our courts open? For God's sakes, Wisconsin can."
Sir, I've got one question for you. Would you have been able to, without the pilot program, handle the Brown County case?
Probably. But, I mean, could I have been assigned to it? Only if there was a workload basis for it. Only if there was a need for it. But otherwise, no, there are eight judges there. One of them would have handled it. And they would... And Judge Blanchard wrote to you in his submissions and says, and Judge Kloppenberg, I think, said something similar. You know, judges are smart. They can figure this out. Of course they can. But I'm a better juvenile court judge today than I was before I took the course in April. I understand things better today about the problems children have than I did in April. And why wouldn't you want to put somebody who will make the time, who understands the importance of the time to get it done? It's just it's just a situation where this is a great system. Every county, every state around us has a commercial court. For, I think Justice Bradley was asking, if I'm not mistaken, we're up to 27. Well, the 28th state called me last Thursday. In Oklahoma, one of the judges who's just been appointed to a governor's steering committee said, I'd like to talk to you about how you did it, because I know you guys are a leader in everything else. You must be a leader in this.
That's right. Isn't it wonderful that Wisconsin has a reputation for being a leader in those areas?
But, Justice Bradley, we're not a leader in this.
We're not a leader in a lot of things.
Well, I know.
We have the reputation. It's
been
longer.
But the point is...
I have a question.
Sure.
But I don't want to cut you off.
I'm way beyond my 5 minutes.
Okay. We're going to grant the petition, we're going to deny the petition, or we're going to do something in between. If we would deny the petition, how do we provide for an orderly wind down of the pilot project such that cases scheduled for trial in the next few months are not adversely affected?
Well, very, very good question, and thank you for asking that question, because that's been on my mind quite a bit too. If you decide that we've blown it, we're not going to get the opportunity to extend this, I think that the assignments that have been made to the courts that have been made should continue for the life of that case, because these cases are complicated, and a lot of times there are a lot of moving parts. I have one case where I have 35 lawyers involved, for example. I don't want that, and that happens to be a Marinette County case, but if it weren't, that would be a case, that would be a disaster. So if you decide not to do this at all, I would plead with you to enter an order that the current assignments remain in force until that case is done.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Judge. Paul Swanson. 5 minutes goes fast. Just to let everyone know, if we want to try to get everyone through this morning, I have a work phone call at 12:15.
I'll try to talk really
quickly. I can give you till then, but that's just to give everyone a heads up on how the universe looks right now.
Hey, please the court. I'm Paul Swanson. I'm with Swanson Sweet, and primarily practice bankruptcy law, insolvency law, generally representing small businesses, mostly debtors. So that gives you a little background. I'm obviously not a big business attorney. I represent debtors. Some of my colleagues said that we are friends to those who have no friends, which sometimes is true, because in this particular case, this is civil litigation. The little guy always gets crushed by the big guy who can afford the lawyers. And let me tell you that this is the age of specialization, too. I'm a board-certified bankruptcy specialist, have been since 93. I practice primarily in the federal courts. The bankruptcy court is a specialty court. Tax court is a specialty court, court of contract claims, then there's a district court. So I'm kind of used to that specialization. We have a lot of resources in federal court, which is great. The state court, not so much. But you have pointed out, Justice Karofsky and Justice Bradley, that you, in fact, in Dane County, kind of self-selected a specialty and stayed in the court you stayed in, family court,
It was criminal cases. Yeah.
And Justice Bradley, I remember when you took the bench and you were a civil litigator, you know, scorched earth litigator, I might add. But and then you went into kitty court and did that for 2 years and got really good at it. And there's something to be said for that. You can pick up the substantive law really well. You learn it really well. But you get a feeling for the litigants and how these cases go. And that really makes a difference. Likewise, in the commercial pilot program. And I was trained to be a tax lawyer, I had a great mentor, but I ended up becoming a bankruptcy lawyer. Who knew? And it took me a long time to come out of the closet and say, I'm a bankruptcy lawyer, because I didn't want to pigeonhole myself. But things have really changed from when I started practicing in 1979 until now. Now people self-select, and they self-select specialties by and large. This court is a great idea. It's great in practice. I'll give you a couple of examples. But remember, this really isn't judges just focusing on civil conflict, civil litigation. This is really more of a process. And these are judges who have volunteered to do this because of an affinity for it or experience they had in private practice or maybe on the bench where they learned how this works. Big law, discovery, a lot of electronically stored information. I mean, the abuses that can befall a litigant that has few resources are somewhat attenuated by the commercial docket, because the process of the commercial docket keeps these things going. That's the beauty of it. It's not that the judges are spending hours and hours and hours trying to figure out certain issues. They're basically holding the litigants' feet to the fire. They're holding scheduling conferences, status conferences. They're there when there are disputes in discovery, and this moves the case along. Let me give you an example, because I think you want some examples of this. I represented, during COVID, a landscape contractor who, you know, had a pretty good-sized crew and was doing work for a really wealthy guy on his 100-acre estate north of Appleton. And he did millions of dollars worth of landscaping. It was more than landscaping. It was moving earth and changing streams and things like that. And he didn't get paid for 5 months of work for some reason, and it got up to $800,000, and the guy just stopped paying and kicked him out, locked him out. This is a small businessman. We got on the commercial docket. This is during COVID. Greenberg Traurig is on the other side. You can well imagine a big law firm just crushing a little guy. He laid off most of his people. He sold off most of his equipment just to stay alive. Judge Gill was on the commercial docket in Allegheny County. He moved that case along. He didn't rush anybody, but on the other hand, he was firm. And by God, he held it to a trial date. He wouldn't change the trial date. He said, I've adjourned this once. I'm not going to do it again. Then we got Judge Sankovitz appointed as a mediator, and by God, it's settled. And that is the only thing that saved my guy from just going out of business and going away. He now is successful. He has a lot of employees. He got a good settlement out of it, and he moved on. And that is really a great example of how this got process. It moves it through. And Judge Gill had a lot of commercial practice. That's where he came out of. So he kind of understood this. Another one is the Hotel Northland in Green Bay. That was a commercial docket case. I was the receiver of that case. It was a large hotel that was kind of burned out downtown, and it was going to be historically renovated, and the contractor got into a dispute with his partner, mired in litigation, historic tax credit financing, had a due date by which it had to be finished, or $20 million worth of tax credits would go away. Judge Atkinson, the lender filed an action in business docket court. Judge Atkinson got it, appointed me as the receiver, and I finished a $47 million hotel that was basically burned out when we started. We got in under the deadline. We got that financing. Green Bay got all those jobs. They got rid of an eyesore downtown, a real benefit to the community, and he moved that case along. He forced the litigants, and there were many, many objectors to that, to basically attend hearings, and he made decisions on an expedited basis. And that, and I would say he didn't do that at the expense of any other portion of his docket. He just did it. And that is a success story. And finally, a third example, another receivership case, litigation pending in Manitowoc County forever. It was a partnership dispute, 50-50 partnership. One of the spouses died, and there was litigation over who was going to buy these restaurants. They're very profitable franchise restaurants. And there was a judicial assignment, went down to Judge Stengel in Sheboygan County. All the litigants are in front of him, and I think he looked over the bench and he said, doesn't this seem like the proper case for the commercial docket? And the litigant said, well, sure, Judge. And it got assigned to Judge Abrahamian. And after all those years of stagnation up on the docket in Manitowoc County, he appointed me receiver again, thank God. And we ended up, I ran these three restaurants during COVID for a period of about 6 or 7 months as a receiver. We ended up, of all things, getting Judge Neese in to mediate a settlement, and he did. And that was because Judge Abrahamian held their feet to the fire and was moving this along, and it was going to go to litigate. It was going to be sold. He ordered me to sell the restaurants, and that got it done. So that's another great example of all those jobs that we saved, those three restaurants. They didn't close down, and we just kept it going, and we got these assets turned around. We recycle assets in what I do. Let me also give you a we really do need more members of the committee. If you continue this worthwhile program and let these judges who are volunteers continue, who have an affinity for civil litigation, really know what they're doing, much like, well, Milwaukee County is actually kind of all specialty courts, isn't it? Don't you do two-year rotations there, and you become really, really good at what you do, and then you move on to the next thing and become really, really good at that? Well, this is kind of the same thing. These judges are really good at it, and they want to do it, and I don't think they're taking away from anything else. We do need more help. We really could use an expanded committee. I would urge you that if you do approve this, that you appoint some more people to help us do this. I will say that we did a CLE program, which I'm very, very proud of. I was chair of the CLE committee of the State Bar for years and years. I really enjoy programs. I did it for a national association, did national conferences. We did it, and we got over 100 attendees for the live program. It was just great. Litigation skills for young lawyers, which you hardly ever see anymore out there. I don't know how many people watch the video replay, but we put that together, the committee. We put it all together. We got judges. We got lawyers. And it was just had it not been on the day of the NCAA basketball tournament where Marquette played, I think we would have a lot more people coming. But it's just such a worthwhile program. I believe in it. The committee believes in it. The people who use it really believe in it. I think that makes a difference.
Counsel, I just wanted to ask a quick question about, but I think an important question about the perceptions in the legal community of how well state courts do at handling commercial litigation. And I know that's maybe a sensitive question to ask you, but I also know that you are incredibly well connected around the state and tied into the legal communities, both federal and state. And so I think you might be in a good position to answer this. But let me tell you my general feelings, and you tell me if you think it's right or wrong, candidly here. And I mean no disrespect to any of my judicial colleagues at all by this question, but I think it's good to ask honestly what's happening. It seems to me that over the years that most business clients want to arbitrate rather than be in court in general. Maybe that's changed. I don't know. And that people would rather be in federal court than in state court. And that of all the different court systems out there, that people are less likely to want to litigate a sophisticated business dispute in state courts. And in some sense, there's a follow-the-money kind of approach here of what people who engage in contracts with one another and are seeking to enforce their rights and their belief about how well state courts do, whether it's time, whether it's capacity, whether it's familiarity. More of our judges come from the criminal sphere. There's few people who might have practiced in the business sphere. So there's all kinds of reasons for that. But it seems to me that perhaps this pilot program is attempting to rectify either that lack of experience and or confidence in state courts' ability to deal with these kinds of issues. And so, anyway, that's sort of the broad picture. And I'd like to hear if you think, am I correct in my assessment of how attorneys and litigators think about that? If not, that's fine. I just really want to know your thoughts
on
that.
You are, I think, generally speaking. I hate arbitration myself. I think that that's... I'd rather be in front of a real live judge, you guys. I mean, in your former lives. But I think that from my perspective, and the type of practitioner that's similar to me, who represents small businesses, we'd rather have a quick decision in state court. It's going to be quicker. It's going to be local. The judge is going to sort of understand who's affected by it. And to get a quick decision saves money, saves time, saves lives, if you will, because businesses are living, breathing things. And if they're bogged down in litigation and all the money goes away, then they're into Chapter 7 bankruptcy. So to get a quick decision, if it's positive, they continue in business, negative, well, maybe they don't, but at least they get a decision to get on with life. And our state courts are really well positioned to do that. Some judges, I think, really enjoy civil work. Maybe those who came from civil practice, but not exclusively. Others couldn't stand it. They don't know the first thing about it. They never took it in law school. They didn't do it when they were the assistant DA or the DA or whatever. And it's like, holy cow, what do I do now? So, you know, they look to us, I think, the practitioners in some effect. And this is, I think, the commercial docket is the embodiment of what we think or what you thought was something that would streamline the process, give us justice in a reasonable amount of time, a decision in a reasonable amount of time and basically preserve businesses, if you will.
So, in other words, are you saying it promotes public trust and confidence in the courts?
I think it does, because if you can get into court and actually get a decision, despite the world telling you that once you get in court, you're never going to get out of court and it's going to cost you every last time you have, if you can get an effective decision in a reasonable amount of time for a reasonable amount of money, isn't that really the economics of it?
Counsel, like you, I handled receivership cases later in my civil litigation career. Perhaps you can expound upon the benefits specifically to perhaps the employees of those companies that are trying to potentially reorganize. Can you tell us, is it just, I mean, these aren't big businesses. These are generally smaller companies in Wisconsin. They're struggling companies in Wisconsin. What is the specific benefit to companies in those particular bad situations?
We have this thing called Chapter 128. It's a very small statute, and it's modeled on the Bankruptcy Act, the old Bankruptcy Act. And it allows us, as receivers, once we're appointed, to basically keep the company operating, living and breathing, and try and find a buyer for it. Usually there is a buyer for it, but because of liens or all these claims that need to be sorted out, it would be impossible to sell without a court order, free and clear, on notice, with procedure, to everybody. So if the receiver can sell the assets of the business, the employees go with it, the buyer hires all the employees, gives them all jobs, keeps it going. Maybe it's some external lawsuit over here or some other reason that affected the company, but the company's basically good. I mean, that's a great benefit, and I think we're really good at it in Wisconsin. And that, actually, it wasn't initially on the pilot program list, and I noticed that, and I talked to Justice Rogensack, and she, oh, that's an oversight, and she put it in there. And that's the best thing that ever happened because it's a process. A lot of claims, a lot of little things that have to be organized, and I think the commercial docket judges got good at it.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Judge Neen. So do you remember settling the case?
Well, all of the best Supreme Court arguments that I've heard begin with, may it please the court. So let me begin by saying, may it please the court.
Judge Neese, let me jump right in. You wrote what I consider a pretty passionate 9-page letter that is signed by you and Judge Markson. We heard some what I thought were compelling statements and presentations this morning. Did any of those presentations or statements that you heard change your mind at all? And if so, why or why not?
Well, no, they haven't, because I've heard them all before for years, and they have not addressed the problems that we have identified for years with competent data demonstrating that this court is solving a problem that existed because one has not been identified and is doing things better than the other courts. And I wanted to start with Justice Hagedorn's question. Should we deny the petition? Should we grant the petition? Or should we come somewhere in between and see if we can salvage what I say is a complete mess? And I say, get rid of it and start from scratch. And the reason I say that is because they have not identified any problem to be resolved. Nobody, during the time that I was a judge for almost 16 years, 13 of which was on the civil bench, much of which was dealing with commercial litigation, I have mediated for three-plus years since I've gotten off the bench. I represented businesses for 26 years, and I have not heard ever one complaint about the court system in this state lagging behind on commercial litigation, being too stupid to handle it, or whatever it is. Now we hear from WMC that we're not saying the judges can't handle this. We're saying that all of the judges can handle this around the state. All right, as far as I'm concerned, that's game, set, and match. If they can all handle it, and they haven't identified a problem, why are we, as Judge Elke and Judge Lanford say, creating a solution for a problem that doesn't exist?
Judge Neese, I have the same question I asked the attorneys who spoke in favor of the business court. Was there any survey, any data, any studies done before family courts and probate courts and civil courts and gun courts and homicide sexual assault courts, felony courts, misdemeanor courts, children's courts were established? In other words, it seems like you are in strongly opposing the creation and the continuation of these business courts, holding them to a very different standard than other specialty courts have been held to in the past.
Absolutely not. And the reason is this. If you're talking about the treatment courts, and I
no, I'm not.
All right. At least we've gotten rid of that, because for a long time they were talking about this is the same thing as a treatment court, and it is not. And now what you're talking about is a number of courts that have started in the legislature, and there is a lot of legislation dealing with juvenile courts. There's a lot of legislation dealing with family law. And there is no specialty court in Dane County for family, and that's because it falls within civil. All of the civil judges and, all of the judges, because when they rotate out of civil, they take the families with them that they still have children. If you catch a family case while you are in civil, it stays with you until the last child reaches age 18. We don't have a specialty court. We follow the law, and we do what judges do. And the same judges that handle family cases are the same judges who have to use the same techniques acumen and experience to handle all cases. I listened to all of these examples here today, and there wasn't one that I can tell you would have been handled any differently by a competent civil judge, a competent one county judge, educated well by the Judicial College, which is a shining star in this state and has been ignored by this business court for 8 years. This idea that business needs some additional training and we need more specialized judges is right down the alley of the Judicial College that you folks created and is a model around the country.
It is indeed, but when I joined Children's Court as a judge, and again, I've talked about how I didn't have any experience in the court and I welcomed all the education I could get. At that time, there weren't any programs offered by the state judicial education program, and I was sent to Reno for the National Judicial College to attend programming there.
Well, they stopped that. I did go to Reno for complex commercial litigation, where this business court idea was just starting to bubble up, and I could see no benefit for Wisconsin and left it at that. But I went in, when I was first appointed a judge back in 2004, I went into the criminal division. I had never once handled a criminal case. I rolled up my sleeves, I figured out the law, and more than anything, I relied on the lawyers in front of me, excellent lawyers, who educated me and made sure I didn't make a mistake, because they don't want me to make a mistake anymore than I wanted to make a mistake. Now, this is the same thing with business lawyers and businesses. They are the smartest businesses are the smartest litigants in the system. They know that every second they are in court, every second that they are paying lawyers is a drag on their business. So they move things along and they educate the judges. They file briefs. There's no reason why we need a special court.
Judge Neese, your passion on this is perplexing to me.
You're not the first.
Just being candid about it, you know, this is not unique. This is something that happens around the country. Texas has a civil Supreme Court and a criminal Supreme Court, yet your argument that you presented to us was that somehow that destroys the independence of the judiciary or something like that. And I just don't understand that at all. I don't understand the argument that this is somehow an attack on the independence of the judiciary or judges to have a court dedicated to particular kind of cases. And I'll just be honest, it reads to me like you've got an axe to grind that is more political in nature, in part because of your criticisms of the former Chief Justice and others who've been involved in this that read a lot more like a political attack. Now, I'm not saying there aren't reasonable questions you raise. There are smart arguments about making sure we have data, asking good questions. Is this supported? I'm not saying there aren't arguments there. But your particular approach here looks to me like you doth protest a bit too much for the idea here.
Well, the problem is I have not been able to protest soon enough. This thing was 5 years before I got a chance to address this court to explain why it is a bad idea. Now, I don't know why it's difficult for people to understand that when business gets together in a closed room and forms a court and then brings a fully baked product within 6 weeks to this court that is then passed within 2 weeks and nobody else knows about it back in 2016, why that can't be seen as something that should not have gone forward. Why the judges are then, who are on the committee, are then the judges, except for the appellate judges, Mike Fitzpatrick. And they form their own procedures. They now, according to Will, they've got their own bank of precedent in form of circuit court decisions. That's what this list of circuit court decisions is viewed as by Will. They just put that in their submission. I think that's wrong. I think that there is nothing that business needs from this court other than what it's already had. Business can take care of itself, and it's always taken care of itself.
Judge Nace, I have to stop you there because I'm going to be really frank with you. I've read everything you've written, including all the op-eds that you wrote all over the state of Wisconsin, which I think were really unfair to the members of the committee. You've characterized them basically as captured by special business interests.
Yes.
Are you accusing Laura Brenner of being captured by special business interests simply because she chooses to represent businesses? Are you saying the same to Attorney Swanson? You've also called it corrupt and jeopardizing the integrity of the judiciary. Are you questioning the integrity of Judge Morrison, Judge Abrahamian, Judge Fitzpatrick for their work on this committee? Because I have to tell you, as a former business practitioner, I probably would have volunteered to serve on this committee. And I have the privilege of representing big businesses, small businesses. I represented Grady Foundries when they were going through a Chapter 11 reorganization. It was one of the most stressful experiences in my life because what was riding on our backs as attorneys trying to save this company and find a buyer for it and preserve its assets were the jobs of countless people in the state of Wisconsin who otherwise might have been thrown into personal bankruptcy because they lost their jobs if we weren't able to save that company. And we did save it, and I'm really proud of that. The reason I'm saying this to you is because you're criticizing them for, oh, you have no evidence, no evidence, no evidence. Where's your evidence that any of these fine people, judges and lawyers, esteemed by their colleagues throughout the state, and who have very grateful clients for the work they do, how can you say that they're captured by special business interests? Is a dairy farmer a special business interest? I just don't understand. Where is this coming from, Judge?
This is coming from, now I'm in my 47th year as a licensed attorney, 50 years of being in the law, if you count law school. I've for 26 years represented corporations. I know corporations as well as anyone here. I know that there are situations that are difficult. I've dealt with them. I've dealt with very difficult situations. I was the rehabilitation liquidation judge for the entire state for insurance companies. I know what the difficulties are that business faces. The judges know. But most of all, the businesses and their lawyers do, and they don't need this court in order to advance their interests. My objection to this court comes from a deep level of respect for this court system and for all who come before it. And I am telling you that business does not need your help in the form of a special court. They are doing just fine. They've always done just fine, and they will continue to do just fine if you get rid of this court. Now, they're talking specialization. All right, let's have the conversation. But let's not just willy-nilly do this specialization of a business court while not letting anyone else in on the process as they're doing it. Let's get rid of this court, let the cases go through, and then let's have a full conversation involving all stakeholders in this state as to whether we should go into specialization. I have my own views about it. Apparently they have their own views. They got their specialization. What about the rest?
But we've talked about the rest. Should Milwaukee County be forced to dismantle its gun court? I mean, for you to suggest that somehow special business interests are getting special treatment is analogous to suggesting that people who have committed gun violence in Milwaukee County are getting special treatment because they have a gun court now. The whole point of it is about establishing, creating efficiencies so that cases can proceed expeditiously. And Chief, I should go down to the podium because I could testify about the troubles I had practicing in the state courts of Wisconsin, with all due respect to my colleagues who are fine people. But there are judges on the bench who don't like these cases. There are judges on the bench who avoid civil rotation in Milwaukee County because they don't want to touch these cases. What's wrong with the fact that there might be judges out there who maybe practice in the area or didn't, but have an interest in learning and want to dedicate themselves, just as I did, and Judge Malmstadt did, and Judge Simple did, and Judge Foley did, and many others, dedicated themselves to learning and studying and becoming specialists in children's law so that we could better serve the people of Wisconsin? What's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with judges learning about the subject matter of the case before them. I listed for you probably 20 different subject matters and could have gone on and on that civil judges handle all the time. Mr. Swanson gave you the example of a very difficult case with anesthesiologists. He was able to explain it in 3 minutes, and you could figure out what to do with it. You need to get a standstill agreement and send it to mediation, and that's what he did. Congratulations. You don't need a special court for that. And if I can't convince this court that allowing business to have input on the judges who are going to be handling their cases, on the appointment of those judges to the business court, then you and I are just going to have to disagree.
What's your evidence there again? You've said some
several things.
Pretty,
you want my evidence? I'll tell
pretty,
you.
Pretty salacious things about suggesting that then Chief Justice Rogan sat collaborated with special business interests.
Because I was approached by the business committee to be on this business court, and I was told that it was the business committee that wanted me on it. And two of the business court advisory committee members, the only two circuit judges, turned out to be the circuit judges that were assigned to the business court. I don't think there is a denial that there has been input from the business court advisory committee into the selection of judges. That has been the biggest objection that I've had to this entire court. It's unnecessary, and it gives off the bad impression. And this court is the only institution that can protect assiduously the integrity of the entire court system, and I say that that's a threat.
Well, again, I ask you, are you suggesting that the judges who are handling the commercial docket, including Judge Morrison, Judge Abrahamian, and others, are somehow corrupted by special business interests?
And if you had truly have read everything that I have said, then I have said that several times, that I am not attacking these judges for what they are doing with these cases. I am attacking a structure that was unnecessarily grafted secretly onto our court system without the benefit of input from all of the stakeholders.
So it seems to me that you have, if I could just distill this down, to two major concerns with this. One is the process that began the business court pilot project and the process that continued the business court, the interim rule and the interim project as it was that was supposed to end just over a year ago, right? So first is the process. The second, as I understand, is more substantive, and it involves who is picking the judges to be on the court. But I also found interesting in your submission to us for today, number five, where you talk about the, based on your experience both as a litigator and as a judge, where you're talking about civil cases in general, and you say that basically, I'll use my words, not yours, yours are quite flavorful, that the business cases, that it's, you say it's pure myth. I'll skip the next phrase, that business cases are more difficult for circuit judges to resolve than other civil cases, and then you go through a litany of cases, medical malpractice, constitutional litigation, prison litigation, admin agency review, child custody disputes, service contracts, warranties, legal malpractice with its case within a case, insurance coverage, insurance bad faith, landlord-tenant disputes, product liability, wrongful death, tax litigation, home construction cases, real property disputes, will contests, class actions, mass torts, environmental cleanup, antitrust, eminent domain, and on and on. And I really do want to just give you the opportunity to explain to all of us the difficulty in that long list of cases as compared to the difficulty of business cases. How do all of those match up to the average business case?
I'd say that it depends on the case. Some business cases you solve like that. You get the late last minute Friday afternoon hair on fire motion for a temporary injunction to stop the other side from moving furniture out of a warehouse or whatever it is. You get the lawyers on the phone. You get a stand down agreement. You give them a date the next week. They hear the temporary injunction and they show up and they say, we don't need the temporary injunction. We've resolved things. Then there are the ones I've had. I had the AWP case. It's not exactly a commercial case, but it is as complicated a case as you are going to find that went for years. It went for years before I got it. But we resolved 36 cases well, if you divide the time for all of them. It went for years. And we had this legal malpractice case that was the last case of mine that you folks looked at. And that was extraordinarily difficult. It took 2 weeks of trial. It took back and forth to the tax court in the middle of it. You know, judges rely on lawyers, and business has great lawyers. These are great lawyers. And they will get most of it done. Most of the time, on all cases, you let the lawyers have what they need from the court to do the jobs that their clients want. And if one side or the other thinks things are out of whack, you put it on for a hearing and you deal with whatever it is. And I have not ever heard anyone in Dane County or throughout the state say that business has been adversely affected by that situation. And I am in mediations with business. I bet 10% of my cases since I retired were complex business dissolutions. And I talk to these lawyers. I watch them work. I watch their clients and how they handle things. And I'm telling you, they don't need this court. They've got it figured out. They get to mediation and get it done. The statistics that Will gives you about, you know, breakneck speed that we're doing these cases, there's nothing there that's unusual in terms of the timing. Well, it is unusual if you compare it to the Georgia experience, which is 3.5 years longer than business court, but our cases don't take 3.5 years.
Judge, I've got questions for you about your comments about all of this being done in secret and behind closed doors, and shadowy was a word that was used. I was on the court. We discussed the petition. I'm reading from our order from 2017. We discussed the petition at Open Rules Conference on November 7, 2016. December 19, 2016, a letter was sent to interested persons seeking input. The petitioner filed a response. The court conducted a public hearing on February 16, 2017. Many people testified. I won't go through that litany. But to suggest that any of this was done in secret and without public input, we solicited public comment and held an open hearing.
Justice Bradley, the court had already been adopted by this court. The business court was already enacted by this court in November, first week in November of 2016, If you go to the State of the Judiciary address from Chief Justice Rogensack, she trumpeted this as an accomplishment of the court, that they had a business court, and that had been adopted just the week before her speech, and that they were going to have a public hearing to fine-tune the process. It wasn't to adopt the process. Nobody was involved before it was adopted, except business people. I've got a whole box full of stuff that can show you this. I'm happy to do it. I didn't know that was actually in dispute, that you didn't think that this thing was done when you sat down at the public hearing. It was done.
It's a pilot. It always has been a pilot.
Okay, so why not treat it as a pilot? Why not gather the data that is necessary to evaluate this against what's gone before it? None of that.
You're holding this idea of a specialty court, which we all understand you're passionately opposed to, but none of that was done. To my knowledge, I'm waiting for somebody to correct me, but to my knowledge, none of this was done before any other specialty court was created in the state of Wisconsin. I'm talking specialty court, not the collaborative treatment courts, but the specialty courts, family, probate, et cetera.
So
why do we have to have all this evidence?
A lot of that is statutory, by the way, but you're asking the wrong guy. I wasn't admitted to the practice of law until 1978.
Well, I was admitted a little earlier, so
yeah,
let me
know. And I had a case
you.
With you in Wausau. You probably don't remember it, but I'm still scarred from it, but just kidding. I don't know how that – I don't know the answer to your question, but I can't believe that there wasn't some more consideration given to let's start having all these specialty courts without some sort of analysis.
I think you're right on the 2016.
Yes.
However, it was discussed at an open rules conference November 7, 2016. So it was
I saw the one where everybody showed up and made these arguments, which didn't hold water, but it was already passed by that. It was a done deal. I find that a shadowy process, frankly. You and I can disagree about
it. An open conference is a shadowy process.
No, adopting the court. Where was the notice that you were going to adopt the court that day? When was the notice that you were even going to consider the court that day? I can't find it. There's nothing in the public record. So, those of us who have a strong incentive to be involved in this process, the judges, for example, we're busy. I mean, how are we going to know that you guys are going to do this without something to tell us you're going to do it?
But again, the petition was filed by Attorney Rothstein on behalf of the Business Court Advisory Committee over a year, before the court.
The record will just reflect the timing and the open hearings, I think.
I want to get Chief Justice Ziegler to her phone call, but I'm happy to answer questions. I do not shy from the passion or from my arguments. This court needs to be terminated, and if we need something to help business, which has not been demonstrated, let's start from scratch and let's involve everybody in the way you usually do, through your internal protocols of setting up committees to study issues of maximum importance to the court system. I do not mean to offend. I hope you are not offended, but you look angry. I'm not here. I tell the folks in my court, I'm not here to make you sad or angry. I'm here to talk the truth, and this is my truth. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Judge Stark.
Let's see. I'm trying to figure out how to make my comments a little more concise. As you know, I'm on the court of appeal after you. The likelihood of concluding in the next 5 minutes is pretty remote.
So
I've got to at least get on Zoom and whatever. So,
all right.
Go ahead.
Does that mean then we're going to reconvene after lunch on this?
We are going to need to, but yes. I would like to hear from Judge Stark. And
well, would you like me to wait till afterwards?
No.
So I have a chance to, okay.
No, but, but if you're not finished, I'd like you to continue because
I can be here. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I've written 3 letters to the courts. We've already got them, and I called your attention to them in my most recent correspondence. I recollect the timing that Judge Neese mentioned because I was so shocked about the fact that the court was going to be created when I sat with Judge Fitzpatrick at dinner during the judicial conference in 2016, and he told me about it, and I was surprised, to say the least. And it was after you had invited some comment that I wrote in my letter of 2017, essentially realizing the court was a done deal, and trying to make some recommendations for how that court could actually be successful. And my letter was a roadmap, and it was intended to be a roadmap to say, these are the problems with the court as it's instituted. These are the ways that those things can be corrected. And we are 7 years later, and those very roadblocks that I mentioned in my letter of 2017 were not considered, or if they were, they certainly weren't acted upon, because they are the same roadblocks we hear about in Ms. Brenner's letter to the court as to why this court needs another 2 years as a pilot. I submit that I agree with Judge Neese in the sense that it's time that this experiment be done and that we reconvene to implement this court the way any other court is implemented. And in answer to your question, Justice Bradley, I do have some knowledge about how those different dockets are created, separate and distinct from specialty courts, which are not talking about and with which I have a great deal of knowledge. But those separate dockets are created in some measure like specialty courts in that they research the number of cases, they research how many people handle them, they research how long they take to come to fruition, they look at national standards to determine whether or not they're within the time frames they should be. So, for instance, in Milwaukee County, and I wasn't there when they instituted all of those different dockets, but I can also tell you what we looked at in Eau Claire County. We realized that we had 6 judges at the time. I was there 5. And National Center of State Court Standards has a whole ton of information about how you determine whether or not you should have specialty dockets. And generally speaking, you only have specialty dockets if you have 8 judges or more, because you don't have enough people to cover the different types of cases, and they don't work well with your scheduling. So in this state, we have specialty dockets in approximately 12 to 15 counties, if I'm correct, and the ones you're most familiar with are the largest, which are Milwaukee, Waukesha, and Dane, if I recall correctly. And within those, they looked at how many cases of particular types they had, and how long they took to come to fruition, and then they determined how many judges they had and who could handle what. So over time, they have created specialty courts, gun courts and homicide courts, and you and Justice Protasewicz are very familiar with those, as is Justice Dallet. But they were analyzed and researched first and foremost to determine whether it made sense to have them, how many cases they had, and what would be the cost associated with handling them in a different way. They were put in a docket because they are all scheduled, case managed similarly, and to some extent, and absolutely correct, Mr. Swanson testified about or talked about the fact that you develop an expertise in a case over time after you've handled it over a period of time. But I submit in this situation, that's not happening. We have 35 of these cases a year handled by all these judges who have now been appointed to this court? They might handle 3 or 4 a year in their entire docket. That's not developing a specialty or expertise. They're doing the same thing they would do if they were in a docket handling those types of cases, whether it's a single judge court or it's a civil court in Dane County or Milwaukee County or Waukesha County. So I think the hard part about this court is it sort of is a conglomeration between specialty courts, treatment courts, and dockets. And we are using a misnomer when we call it a specialty court, because it's not. It's a specialty docket or a special docket or a specific docket. So in Milwaukee County, as an example, if that's how they want to proceed, if this court were going to continue, it would make sense to look at how many civil cases do we have? How many civil cases do we have of the types that are as part of this court? And how much time do they take? And I'm going to suspect, given the dearth of cases that have come to this court out of 145,000 civil cases in Wisconsin for the 5 years between 2017 and 2022, we had, 200? This infinitesimal. It's just such a fraction that there is not a need in Milwaukee County to have a special judge allocate a portion of their time to hear only these types of cases.
But Judge Stark, how do we know that? Milwaukee won't participate for whatever reason. It's the largest county in the state. You're talking about having a dearth of numbers. If you don't have Milwaukee participating, you're going to have a dearth of numbers.
The court system has the numbers. The district court administrator has the numbers. They can get that information very easily. I'm sure whether Judge Ashley wants this or not, as chief judge, he would provide you with the information you're requesting. What has to be done is somebody has to take the time and the effort to keep these numbers. Having developed a specialty court in 2001, I can tell you we didn't open it in 6 weeks, and I appreciate the difficulties that and why that happened. And I understand that, and I am not in any way denigrating the people who work on this court or who put it together. I did business work, 18 years as a civil litigator handling these cases. I loved having these cases in my circuit court branch. I relished the day I got these types of cases in my court, but they were few and far between. And that's what I'm suggesting is happening here. When you open a court like this, you take a year and a half. We spent a year and a half volunteer time over and above my regular court calendar. My colleagues all said, we're not going to take any of your cases if you want to do this foolish drug court thing. Fine. I felt it was important. I took a year and a half of my time. We got grants to travel all over the country to train on it. We mentored courts. We did lots of study. We did data collection. And then we opened our court as a pilot project for 2 years. And after that, we were evaluated. And you can get data from all kinds of universities. They're more than willing to come in and do it for free. That's what we did. We got the University of Cincinnati to come in and evaluate our court. We thought we were doing great. Guess what? We were terrible. We were terrible. And we thought we were following all evidence-based practices. They told us what we should be looking at. They established our evaluative criteria. They helped us determine who should be coming into the court, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We accepted their processes, and 3 years later they came back with other people and evaluated us. We were within the top 7% of the courts in the country. That's how you handle a pilot project. That's how you develop a court. And that's not what happened here. And so as a result, we are creating caste systems. We have duplications of efforts where we have a court that's litigating cases that other courts are already handling. And as a practical matter, it creates bad perception, and Judge Neese spoke to some of those. There are many judges who would love to do this work, but they're in districts they aren't going to get to. And there are other judges who hate this type of work. But guess what? We are not volunteers. We are elected to do a general jurisdiction in a county, and that's what we should be doing.
So that's not, again, I go back to Milwaukee County because that's what I know, and it wasn't the people of Wisconsin or the people of Milwaukee County who put me in children's court. It was my Chief Judge Kramer. So would your opposition be less if instead of the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court being involved in selecting or having input into the judges who would serve, it just goes to all the chief judges in the judicial districts around the state.
Actually, what should happen, well, first of all, in Milwaukee County, what happens is, as you all well know, when you're elected, you are placed either in misdemeanor, small claims, or children's court. You start there. You learn it. And then you rotate. And why do you rotate? Because you're in a general jurisdiction. You have to do all the types of courts cases that come before the court. And slowly but surely, you rotate from children's to misdemeanor to different criminal to felony to whatever, and then ultimately to civil. Civil is the last court, if you will, if I recall correctly, in Milwaukee County. In Dane County, they handle things a little bit differently. But my point is, you evolve over time. So you develop expertise in different areas of law, and civil is the upper rotation along with perhaps probate, if I remember correctly. But my point is, you rotate. And in this case, we don't have an application process. We don't have any criteria to pick the judges that are selected. Some have had great business backgrounds. Others never had any business background at all. It made people suspicious, whether valid or not. I'm just telling you that.
But that's my whole point. To me, it's very similar to what is done in Milwaukee County. Somebody, it's the chief judge, selects the judges and where they're going to start out. It's also the chief judge who selects the next rotation. As you gain seniority in Milwaukee County, you have a little more input and a little more sway, and you kind of go to the front of the line. If you want to avoid homicide sexual assault, which used to be a court that everybody wanted to go to, now I'm hearing people don't want to do that court. You know, you had some input, but as a younger judge, you don't have any input, but it is... where there's a lot of accusations about this process being undemocratic, but it isn't the voters who are selecting who is going to sit in which rotation and gain the expertise that they need to do their job
but
really
Justice
well.
Krosky's comment was well taken. Judge Morrison wasn't elected to handle a Brown County case. If you're in Milwaukee County, you're elected to preside there over whatever court you have. Whether it is complex civil litigation, because that becomes a subset of the civil docket, if there's enough cases or not. Now, I realize we all can move all over the state, and we do get moved for substitution purposes. But generally speaking, you're elected to a position as a general jurisdiction judge in a general jurisdiction court. And then if you have dockets in your county, you move through them every 2 to 4 years, depending on the process that's established in the county. It's not just willy-nilly that you get to go to children's, but oh, you get to go to civil. It's a process that goes through, and yes, they do consider your request to some extent, but your chief judge ultimately has a decision as to how you move through those dockets. Frankly, Milwaukee County is the only county that has the number of dockets that you're talking about. Waukesha perhaps has 4 or 5. Dane County has perhaps 4 or 5, and there is no other county in the state that has anywhere near that type of specificity. So what happened here is, because of that, they took cases from other jurisdictions and moved them to be heard by other judges, and that is what's creating the consternation. Nobody elected Judge Abrahamian up in Outagamie County. Nobody elected the St. Croix County judges to hear the Eau Claire County case. And that creates an ill will feeling on the part of the judges in those counties, because they feel as if it's perceived they can't handle those cases. I'm not telling you it's valid. I'm just telling you it exists. So my point is, if we started over and we evaluated the need in the different counties that you think or that we believe might be of need of this type of court, we would be in a position then to make a decision with data on how effective and efficient and fair they are and how consistent, which right now we have no data. And I just wanted to point out one other thing. I appreciate 25 other states have these courts, or 27 now, but we are hardly in the minority. We are in the small minority, but we're not an outlier. And I remember my mom telling me, don't just do something that everybody else just. We don't know anything about those courts. We don't know anything about the processes. Many of those judges are elected to a particular court, like a family or a business court. We don't have that in Wisconsin. We're a general jurisdiction elected to our own counties. And that was the problem with creating this court. So I guess I have to stop. I'm run past my time, and I appreciate your listening to me. But I guess I would like to add one more thing. If you would please just indulge me for a minute.
Judge. If you're able to come back after 1:30, based on your submission, too, I have a few questions.
Sure, and I have some other comments as well with some
Let's
of the statistical analysis.
We're adjourned until 1:30.
Thank you.